across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
Brexit tears. Not a good day. A law is now in place to force the PM to go to Brussels on bended knee and ask for an extension if a deal is not in place by the 19th of October. The government has lost yet another vote today, forcing them to hand over secret notes that could embarrass or vindicate the government and how candid they were being with none other than Her Majesty the Queen for their reasons wanting to prorogue Parliament. And finally, tonight, that suspension, that proroguing of Parliament will take place. My name is Nick Dubois, and I'm with you until 1 a.m. in the morning, not just reviewing events of the day, but reporting them, as tonight, Parliament is sitting and voting very soon on whether we should have another election. And I'm asking you if another election will solve Brexit once and for all, or should we have a referendum? You can call me on 0344 499 1000 or tweet me on @talkradio or @NickDubois. But first, what exactly has been going on today in the Palace of Westminster? Today, the great dictator, as Remainers know him and think of him, that's Boris Johnson, is finally suspending Parliament in a few hours' time. And all those angry Remain MPs have been accusing him of cutting short the time to debate serious issues. So given that today is their last chance for 5 weeks to do just that, how do they spend the first part of the day today?
The least disruptive and most democratic course of action would be for me to stand down at the close of business on Thursday, October the 31st.
Yes, the unexpected announcement of the now retiring Speaker of the House, John Bercow, led to copious amounts of that precious time being used to praise him. It seems the man in charge of what MPs talk about decided they should talk about him.
This Parliament is the stronger for your being Speaker. Our democracy is the stronger for your being the Speaker. And whatever you do when you finally step down from Parliament, you do so with the thanks of a very large number of people.
And there's more.
Those reforms have been truly important, and you have been a truly modernising speaker.
And more.
I was in this house after the riots of 2011, and I thank you for helping to recall the house to debate that very, very important subject. And most recently, after a scandal that involved people from Caribbean backgrounds, thank you for granting my urgent question that led the revelation of that scandal.
I'll say this, Boris Johnson has my full support for suspending Parliament if it meant we had to listen to much more of that. Meanwhile, praise was in short supply on the Conservative benches, both for the Speaker and indeed amongst themselves.
But I do find the behaviour of some of my colleagues to have been at times duplicitous, self-serving, but people can always dress things up as principle, can't they?
Well, that's Sir Hugo Squire, Conservative MP, on Talk Radio earlier today. Well, I'm exhausted already.
This is Talk Radio.
Coming up, we talk to two political experts on who wants an election and who doesn't. With me, Joe Twyman, founder of Delta Poll, to help guide me through the evening, and hopefully he can tell me who will win that election whenever it comes. But first, to one of our experts, former Labour advisor and author of A United Ireland, Why Unification is Inevitable and How It Will Come About, Kevin Marr, former Labour advisor, as I say, and a badge some of us, Kevin, wear with some pride, being former special advisors. Good evening to you.
Good evening, mate.
I'm assuming you had the mantle of special advisor, or were you not worthy of that? Were you something else?
Oh, no, I was for a time, yes. No, it's a very nice job title, and I suspect the reality of what special advisors do doesn't often quite match up with the job title. Back carrier, sounding board, and all the rest of it, but...
Well, yes, and often the general rule of thumb is if you're an advisor and you get in the news, then your job's over. And I'm not sure that rule's been applied at the moment, as it happens. But we're not here to talk about that, Kevin. Kevin, look, I suspect a lot of people are slightly confused because what we are going through at the moment is yet another call to have an election. And that's been put down by the Conservatives. It's probably going to be rejected tonight. And on the other hand, you've got Jeremy Corbyn, who, you know, has been calling quite regularly. I think they've recorded 50 times or something in the last 9 months. He's been calling for a general election and he's going to say no. Can you shed some light on why we are once again about to see the great dictator Boris Johnson, as his enemies portray him, and a dictator who clearly calls an election of the people, being rebuffed by the opposition whose sole job is to become prime minister in a government?
It's a very strange time, as you allude, Nick. Certainly. I mean, if you're leader of the opposition, the basic tenet of being leader of the opposition or a member of the shadow cabinet is to say that the government's taking us to hell in a handcart, and the only way of resolving that is to have an election in which they take over and lead us to the sunny uplands. So it's very much in the job description of leader of the opposition that you call for elections. And of course, what we've got here is a strange situation where we've got a prime minister that wants to call an election, but is hemmed in because of the Fixed Term Parliaments Act, which requires 2/3 of the House of Commons to accede to that request. And of course, the opposition parties who are playing a canny game by refusing to accede to an election. Because, of course, they want Boris Johnson to rule out there being a no-deal Brexit at the end of October. So it's a tactical ruse. Jeremy Corbyn, of course, wants a general election. Jeremy Corbyn is desperate to have an election campaign and to get British politics, frankly, onto more familiar territory. I think there's a general... If there's one thing that unites lots of people in British politics, it's the fact that in their heart of hearts, they are sick and fed up of Brexit. They want to get talking about the economy and law and order and the NHS and the welfare state and all the rest of it. And Jeremy Corbyn wants to rip into Boris Johnson, and Boris Johnson wants to rip into Jeremy Corbyn.
But Kevin,
and they
can
want normal service to resume, but that can't happen yet because of where we are with Brexit.
Which of course, is also the argument that Boris Johnson is putting forward as to why he's prorogued Parliament, etc., etc. He wants to get onto domestic issues. But you say Jeremy Corbyn is desperate for an election. Aren't people going to basically see through the argument he's put forward that we need to make sure no deal doesn't happen? Because a general election for him before Brexit is not as attractive, if the polls are to be believed, and we can ask Joe Twyman about that here, who's with me now, than having one afterwards with, let's face it, a possibility that we won't be out by the 31st of October.
I think if you put Brexit to one side and look at the polls as they are today, with the Tories between, you know, kind of 10 points ahead of where Labour is, I think a lot of Labour insiders will think, actually, those aren't bad numbers, given what happened in 2017, where actually in the cut and thrust of a campaign with much bigger oscillations in public opinion than we're perhaps used to having in, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. I mean, things move around a lot faster, I think, these days. And you know, a good appearance in a leader's debate or a bad appearance or a bad press conference or a bad policy that goes down whacks 5 and 6% off an opinion poll lead. So I think the Labour leadership will think, yes, we're behind. Boris Johnson's got a bit of a bump, and he's obviously he's had a spending review which has thrown quite a lot of cash around, which is, as you know, well, obviously what prime ministers and chancellors do ahead of an election. But I think they'll be thinking, look, actually, this is pretty competitive still. This is ground that we can recover. And I think when that election campaign does start, I think the Labour leadership will start with a spring in its step.
I think you're saying that Labour, if you like, have wrong-footed the Prime Minister because they didn't go for the election. If you were advising Jeremy Corbyn now and Boris Johnson took the radical step of saying there is no way... there's no way I'm going to Brussels to ask for an extension. He could actually resign, couldn't he? And leave the prospect of Jeremy Corbyn going cap in hand to Brussels, fighting the cause of Remain, which is not going to go down with the large Labour working class voter. Would you tell him to pick up that chalice if it was offered?
I think there's a danger where we are at the moment in dancing on the head of a pin. I think the games that are being played in Westminster and the to and you know the to and fro and the cut and thrust of Westminster politics and where things are in the House of Commons at the moment is leaving the country in its wake. And I think there's definitely an issue where I think a lot of ordinary people just look at this and just say, for God's sake, can we not just end this infernal discussion about Brexit? Can we not just get it across the line and get it over and done with? And of course, as you say, quite rightly, there's a third of Labour supporters that voted positively for Brexit in 2016. So Jeremy Corbyn's got to, you know, he's had to sort of walk a very kind of careful line these last 3 years, and he's not got much thanks for it from any side, really.
Well, some would say careful.
For the Labour Remainers, they just see him as a crypto leaver, and of course for lots of people, and particularly Northern and Midlands constituencies, there are a lot of Labour MPs who do not want a second referendum. They're keeping their powder dry. They're not just
but can he walk this line into an election, Kevin? Sorry to cut you off, but can he not?
Yeah, no.
How can he walk this line in an election? Isn't there a case he might as well just come out as the All Remain party, because he's in this ludicrous position, as Emily Thornberry described, where they're going to, if they win, they negotiate a deal and then they recommend against the deal in a referendum. It's not sustainable.
It is very, very difficult. I think there's two things here. One is that on the other side of the equation, where are the Conservatives in all this? Are they just an unquestioning Leave party and Leave pretty much in any circumstances? Which, of course, is not the view of, 40% of Conservative voters. And as we've seen, obviously, with the 21 and the 22 with Amber Rudd leaving, there's some very, very senior Conservatives extremely unhappy at the direction of travel in their party. So both are great parties. Are coalitions on Brexit, and they've got significant minorities that turn the absolute different way to the sort of 60% of the party that in Labour's case want to stay in, and the Tories' case want to leave. You've got to kind of be very careful with that, because if you break that support off, that is a big chunk of support to potentially lose. And the main beneficiaries, of course, would probably be the Liberal Democrats, which the only thing that unites Labour and Conservative tribes is a hatred of the Liberal Democrats.
Well,
and I think both party leaders in the final analysis will be very, very careful about the balanced offer that they take to the electorate. And frankly, all of them will be very, very happy if we can get past Brexit and talk about other issues.
Kevin, let's bring Joe Twyman, founder of Delta Poll, in here. I know he wants to ask you a question, but Joe, after you've had that chance to ask that question, I'd love your opinion as to whether a pre-Brexit poll, a pre-October 31st, is really just, even if it could happen, is not on for Labour, and that's the main reason they're ditching this, in your opinion, given the polling. But over to you.
I was going to ask about this strategic ambiguity, because at the moment the polls suggest that the public overwhelmingly favour Boris Johnson over Jeremy Corbyn in a straight fight as the person to best negotiate Brexit. How does Labour go into an election with that kind of background in the polls?
But it's not, of course, it's not easy. But I think frankly, what we'll see again, as we saw in 2017, is a very, very quick narrowing of these polls. And I think that's where this gets to. I think the Labour leadership will be quite relaxed, actually, at the state of the polls as they stand right now. And I think when Boris Johnson, is in a position of having to back up his tactic. I mean, I don't think there's any prospect of an election, frankly, before the 31st of October. That's not going to happen. The Tories don't have the numbers to force that through Parliament, so that's not going to happen. So I mean, if Boris Johnson were to have an election shortly thereafter, leaving on the 31st, and things went sour pretty quickly, as every piece of evidence suggests they will, Operation Yellow Hammer leaks and all the rest of it, fighting a general election campaign with potentially food and medical shortages and queues at ports and airports is not a great vista for winning a general election.
Wherever the polls are today,
they will move very quickly if that's the reality.
So is that Labour's tactic then, to wait in the hope that things go south and pick up the electoral benefits from that?
I think the assumption is Boris Johnson is a very, very bad poker player, and is playing a hand with cards and numbers that he just doesn't have. And I think people can see that both in the European Commission and the Irish government and pretty much everywhere else. And Boris Johnson will do what Boris Johnson has done throughout his political career, which is cut a deal because he's a quintessential pragmatist liberal Tory. And he will leave some of his hardliners high and dry at the altar.
I think he will
cut a deal. And we'll end up with a situation where, actually, we end up with Brexit on Boris Johnson's timeline, potentially, for the 31st of October. But it is a long way short of the kind of crazed, you know,
Now, I'm not going to let you get away with this cliff edge stuff. Come on, Kevin. You're doing really well now. You're not going to get all that in without challenge. Of course, the converse is what you say.
There's a perfectly pragmatic Brexit deal to be had. And I think in the final analysis, that's what Boris Johnson will cleave towards.
I think one thing we can agree, Kevin, is that Boris Johnson has staked his whole political future, effectively, his whole collateral on the 31st of October. Yeah. And quite how that will be fulfilled, we wait to see. What I'm pretty sure, and Joe and I'm sure we will touch on this later, will be actually the impact of not delivering 31st of October. Kevin Marr, former Labour advisor and author of the brilliant book, very interesting read, A United Ireland, Why Unification is Inevitable and How It Will Come About. We didn't have a chance to touch on the backstop today, but Kevin, thank you very, very much indeed for joining us. Joe, you see, there's something about this that I know is making a few people slightly nervous, is that today people are pointing at the language Boris Johnson was using outside with his meeting with the Taoiseach in Ireland, when he was putting more emphasis on the deal, more emphasis on compromise, more emphasis on bringing back a deal that doesn't necessarily sit comfortable with some, shall we say, members on the hardcore side of the Conservative Party, some of the ERG. Should I read anything into that? Should we read anything into that?
Well, we've talked at some length, we being the type of people that rabbit on about this day after day. We've talked about the fact that Labour does have this strategic ambiguity over Brexit. It's neither here nor there. It's neither fully leave, fully remain. But there is an argument to say that the Conservatives are kind of doing the same thing. They're a variation on the theme. Boris Johnson is hoping that the Brexit Party will not damage him too electorally, and he's too much electorally, and he's doing that by saying, well, look, I'm going for a no deal, not scared of no deal, not afraid of no deal. Obviously, if we get a deal, that's good as well. And then to the more moderates, he's hoping to say, actually, I'm going for a deal, but I'm not afraid of no deal. That's a negotiating tactic. What I don't know, and what a lot of people, I think, don't know, is what Boris Johnson truly wants. My suspicion is that he probably wants a deal.
I think so too. Yeah.
But my suspicion similarly is that his advisers want the opposite.
Interesting. This is Talk Radio Live with me, Nick Dubois, and sitting alongside me is Joe Twyman, founder of Delta Poll, bringing you the latest on the vote of a general election. Will it happen? I suspect not, but in years of forecasting, I've not been right very often. Whatever, we will bring you that result live here on Talk Radio, and we're back straight after this.
Feel the forthright fury
across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
So, welcome back to Talk Radio with me, Nick Dubois, as we await yet another vote in Parliament on whether there will be a general election. I don't know why we expect the MPs to decide, because actually, looking back over the last 3 years, I don't think they decided anything, only about one vote. I think they know what they don't want. I'm not quite sure they know what they want. My guess is that we will not have a general election by the end of the evening, but let me know what you think the outcome will be tonight, and call me on 0344 499 1000, or tweet at Talk Radio. Joining me throughout the show is Joe Twyman, founder of Delta Poll. I suspect if you ever go to a drinks or dinner party, everyone will want you to do predictions, but in fact you're all about snapshots of opinion now, aren't you?
That's right. Predictions are extremely difficult at the best of times, and these are far from the best of times.
They must be good for polls. I mean, I'm always seeing polls.
That's true, but in terms of those polls' predictive value for where we might be at a general election on the 31st of October, or after that, or in November, December,
we just don't know, because so much can change in that time. And indeed, just this year, we have seen dramatic changes in public support, back and forth, as the Brexit Party have risen and fallen. Boris Johnson has taken over from Theresa May. Jeremy Corbyn has maintained his position. It's all a fascinating picture of public opinion. And where it goes from here, should an election be called, although we expect it not to be, is going to be equally fascinating.
But I'm presuming you will have been looking at interest, if you haven't done them yourself, at the polling data about between an election now before the 31st of October, i.e. when we come out of Brexit, if that is the case, and an election afterwards. There's a bit of a leap of faith there for Boris Johnson, isn't there? If he goes past the 31st of October and sort of we end up with the extension, and he will be relying, presumably, on being able to say, this wasn't me, this was everyone else, I don't want to do this, give me a mandate and send me back to finish the job.
Yeah, the timing is going to be really interesting. If it takes place before the 31st of October, the campaign will, the Conservatives running at least, will essentially be about the promise that Boris Johnson brings to the whole issue of Brexit. If it's after the 31st of October, he will probably be judged on what he has, or indeed has not, managed to deliver on Brexit, given that he's been talking so much about dying in a ditch with his legs cut off rather than going for...
But he won't be dead in the ditch, to coin his phrase. He will be after the 31st of October, if he finds himself in an extension position, trying to basically say, trust me again to deliver, when he's had a parliament that's pulled the rug from under him. Is that a complicated message to get over?
I don't think it is. I think that the argument that this would be an election, this is the argument that Boris Johnson would put forward, the argument that this would be an election and a choice between parliament or the people, I think is a relatively simple thing to get across. And we know it's a simple thing to get across because in 2016, that formed the basis of the Vote Leave campaign. Take back control. And so this is a variation on that. Boris Johnson would be saying, I want to take back control for the people and deliver Brexit. So that would be one side of his argument. On the other side of the argument, he would be saying, this is a very simple choice for voters. It's a very simple choice. You have either a deal on Brexit with the danger of a no deal, or the flip side of that, no deal on Brexit with the chance of a deal, depending on which audience he's talking to. That's one side of the choice. And on the other side is a Jeremy Corbyn government. And I think that he will be hoping in a lot of those Remain leaving Conservative constituencies, of which there are a number, he will be hoping that the Conservative voters in those constituencies will hold their nose reluctantly, perhaps even bitterly, but they will hold their nose and vote Conservative because the greater fear is of a Corbyn government. I think that's the basis for his election tactics. I think those tactics are far easier and far more straightforward ahead of the 31st of October, but after the 31st of October, they are by no means neutralised.
And of course, what could make life very difficult for him and a lot of Conservative seats is a revitalised Brexit party.
A revitalised Brexit party could have a huge impact. Similarly, a revitalised Liberal Democrats could have a huge impact in the other direction. Look at Brecon and Radnorshire, for instance. If the Brexit party voters had all voted Conservative, and of course there's no guarantee that they would have done that, but if they had done, the Conservatives would have won that seat. And in fact, it wouldn't have taken all of the Brexit party voters. It would have just taken some. Instead, the Liberal Democrats took it. Now, there are 45 constituencies in Britain which are less safe and more Remain leaving than Brecon and Radnorshire, so they could be at danger of slipping to the Lib Dems, and splitting the Leave vote in those constituencies could be a real problem for the Conservatives.
But I say a revitalised Brexit party, I think they're still polling around 10 or 11 or 12% now. And that's with the prospect of a 31st, or what is a diminishing prospect of the 31st of October for Boris to deliver on his pledge to take us out of the EU. It being revitalised by having a campaign after the 31st of October and not having come out, he can't do anything about that except perhaps seek to strike a deal. But the terms of that deal are, I'm not going to be seeking a deal from the EU. It's all about no deal. And that becomes a different campaign then, because surely there'll be Conservative Remainers who will not like that.
we saw how the polls changed dramatically after the first extension back in March, and the effect that then had on the European election results. Now, the European elections were very, very different from what a general election would be, but they do show how the Brexit Party was able to really capitalise on that. Boris Johnson could be placed in a really difficult position where if he goes too far towards the Brexit Party, particularly in terms of some kind of formal pact, he won't win any of the Remain-leaning constituencies that he needs to get a majority. Similarly, if he goes too far towards the Remain side of things and offers them too much, then the Brexit Party might not win seats, but the impact that they could have in individual constituencies, again, could be enough to prevent him getting a majority. It's an extraordinarily difficult tightrope to walk.
We can't just explore what might happen before 31st of October if there was an election, because that's receding, as we know. And yes, it's out there whenever it may be after 31st of October. He's got other options, as I was saying. He could conceivably, for example, resign and challenge Jeremy Corbyn to be forming a government, going out and asking for extension. That would change the dynamics hugely, I suspect. Not much chance of that.
I think that's unlikely. Similarly, there have been suggestions that perhaps a government of national unity led by Kenneth Clark could be the answer. Again, I think that's unlikely. But we've seen a lot of unlikely things
exactly
happen.
Exactly what I was going to take your money. Coming up after the break, we'll be joined by Nadeem Sahawi, Conservative MP for Stratford-upon-Avon, to find out what he thinks the outcome will be on the vote later this evening. That's assuming, of course, he's not in the voting lobby when he's due on here. This is Talk Radio Live until 1 a.m. with me, Nick Dubois.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes.
This is Talk Radio.
Well, James Lure has come into the studio, rushing either from across the corridor, down the corridor, wherever. Good to see you.
Good to see you too, Nick.
Have we missed anything in the last half hour?
Not really. I think we're sort of waiting now for an hour's time when we get that vote on whether we're going to get...
So you think about 11.30?
About 11.30, yes, when we get that sort of vote on the general election. Obviously, it's expected not to happen. It looks like it's going to get turned down. So it could be a bit of an anti-climax, really, Nick.
Well, I'm trying to brace everyone for the shocking news that, guess what, the Labour Party, the opposition, and every other opposition MP and a large handful of Conservatives don't want an election. Brenda will be delighted. Brenda in Bristol is probably, she might ring
she's
in.
Had too many offers, I think, already now, but she's on standby, I'm sure, for many.
I don't know if, how closely you've been keeping an eye on it, but so there's no hint of surprises in there, nothing, no one standing up and saying, shock, horror, I've changed my mind.
No, it doesn't seem that way. I think it's one of those, it does feel like a foregone conclusion, it really does. I think the biggest surprise today, if you want to even call it a surprise, was obviously John Bercow.
Yes, they did love him today on one side of the house.
Indeed.
Did you notice how many Conservatives stood up to praise him?
It seems like it's more come from the other side. Obviously, Jeremy Corbyn spoke a little bit earlier, saying that he's done a lot for them, and well, not a lot for Labour, but obviously a lot for the House of Commons, and
I'm surprised that actually we haven't had more people remarking on how absurd it was that they spent nearly 2 hours, I think. It was certainly an hour and a half when I stopped watching, heaping praise on the Speaker, John Bercow, who today announced his resignation. But he's been up to games, hasn't he? He's not going at the end of a parliament, leaving it up to the next parliament to choose the Speaker, is he?
It feels to me like he's walked before he's been pushed, and he's done it in a way that sort of suits him. So I think he has been clever in the way he's done it, and...
But it means they'll choose the next speaker from this bunch of MPs, when in fact, in reality, that new speaker will be presiding over a house quite possibly a month later that didn't necessarily select that person as speaker. Now, they're not likely to overturn him, even though I suppose technically they could vote another speaker. But it seems to me he's playing games here. Have you picked up any sense of outrage from Conservative commentators?
I think there'll be more reaction, I think, tomorrow. I think, obviously, tonight is the focus for the general election stuff. But we'll see what happens in the next few days, Nick.
James, we will, and we'll be talking to you again later. Thank you, James Lure, for bringing us up to date on absolutely nothing happening in the House of Commons of great interest. Not often that I say that, but maybe I'm wrong, because joining us now is Nadeem Sahawi, Member of Parliament for Stratford-on-Avon and Minister for Business and Industry, to discuss what he thinks the outcome will be on tonight's vote. Good evening, Nadeem.
Good evening, mate.
How are you? Busy? Talking a lot?
Well, I'm you know, focused on the vote tonight. I hope that Jeremy Corbyn and his colleagues will vote for a general election. They've spent the last 2 years calling for one. I think their position actually is untenable, as you know, Her Majesty's loyal opposition, who want their agenda to be the one that is implemented in government. And if they have real confidence in their policies and real conviction, then they should be able to put it to the nation, whether it be on who should be negotiating a good deal, a fair deal for Britain. Should it be Boris Johnson at the summit of the 17th and 18th of October, or should it be Jeremy Corbyn? You know, Jeremy and his colleagues have been saying, as I said, for years, that you know, we need to be allowed to have a general election. We will work, strain every sinew to get a general election. When the Prime Minister offers them that opportunity, they shy away from it.
Nadeem, I know you're there at the heart of things and we're here stuck in a nice warm studio, but the sense is the government's going to lose their bid to call an election and the opposition are all going to say no. What does this mean next? Is Boris Johnson beginning to run out of options to fulfil his determination, his pledge to get us out of the EU on the 31st of October?
I don't think so. I think what you will see happen next is a Queen's speech on the 15th of October, which will be jam-packed full of the domestic agenda that Boris has been talking about over the summer. 20,000 more police officers on the streets, more investment in our hospitals, in our schools, you know, dealing with making sure that those on the lowest pay actually keep more of the money in their pocket. And I think the opposition then will have to either allow a Queen's speech to get through Parliament. And of course, I think simultaneously on the 16th, on the 17th and 18th of October, Boris will go to the European Summit. I actually think he will get a deal, a fair and equitable deal for the European Union, for the United Kingdom, and bring it back to Parliament.
Well, let me ask you about...
If the opposition still refuse to vote for it, then their position becomes untenable in terms of a general election. So they'll have to, at some point, either allow a general election or back Boris's domestic agenda and his deal.
But let me ask you about that. Quite a few people are commentating, and when I say people, I'm talking about commentators more than anything else, on the tone of the Prime Minister's meeting with the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, this morning, saying that the emphasis has shifted, the tone has shifted, that some are concluding he's going to come back with Theresa May withdrawal agreement Mark IV with some tweaks and changes and rely on the fact that so many, a higher number of Labour MPs will back it for fear of a no deal. Have you had any sense of that message having any truth to it whatsoever?
Well, I think the Prime Minister is focused on getting a deal that is fair and equitable for the United Kingdom. And I think he's made it very clear that the backstop in the withdrawal agreement is simply unworkable and would need to be addressed. And his focus on that, I think, is the right one. It's the one that I think will ultimately begin to gain currency and traction in Parliament, and will get through Parliament. So I think he's right to highlight that as the sort of the major hurdle to concluding a fair and as I say, equitable deal. And I think he'll deliver it.
If he's in the unfortunate position. And it is a hypothetical, but if he's in the unfortunate position that Parliament has bound his hands so tightly that in the end, without a deal, he has to go or he's required to go and ask for an extension, then he faces the prospect of a general election, not exactly on his terms. It doesn't look so attractive from a polling point of view, and I suspect that that would be the least likely option for the Conservatives, that they'd want to fight elections still in the EU in November, for example. Is that correct?
Well, I think if you sort of step back and think not about the Westminster bubble, but about the country, and you reflect on the past week, where in the Westminster bubble it was perceived to be a week of setbacks for the Prime Minister. Out in the country, it was perceived to be actually increasing his support. All the polling over the weekend suggested that Boris was building a head of steam, and that the nation sees that the way Parliament's behaving, where it's trying to trip up the Prime Minister every step of the way and sort of, you know, pull the carpet from underneath his negotiating position, that doesn't go down well with the country. The country, from my sort of taking soundings of my own association, and also just people who aren't necessarily Conservative members or voters, but people who could have, you know, voted either way, but, you know, whether Remain or Brexit, they certainly feel that it's time for us to get a deal, a fair and equitable deal, and put this issue behind us. So I think, actually, the opposition parties, including the Liberal Democrats, have got to be very careful, because if they're seen to be hindering a fair and equitable outcome in a negotiation in the national interest, then I think they will suffer for that.
Nadeem, I got Joe Twyman here, founder of Delta Poll, helping me along in these hours to interpret what's happening and sort of tell me what it means. Joe.
Nadeem, good to speak to you again. I've got a quick question for you regarding this distinction between deal and no deal. Isn't there a danger that the Conservatives have a proportion of their voters who now are committed to no deal, a proportion of voters who are committed to a deal, and that pleasing all of those people, as Theresa May found, is going to be extremely difficult?
Well, I think, Joe, one is good to hear your voice on Talk Radio. I think, actually, where the nation is they want to see a fair and equitable deal for the United Kingdom, a deal that delivers Brexit. And I think the Prime Minister can deliver that deal. This isn't easy, because there is a portion of the nation which clearly wants to either revoke Article 50 or have us remain in the European Union. And, you know, part of the campaign, whether it's the People's Vote campaign or others, the SNP or others, is to effectively sort of muddy the waters on this. Actually, my instinct says that people, once the Prime Minister delivers a deal that is fair and equitable on the 17th and 18th of October and brings it back to Parliament, I think it will be very difficult for Parliament to actually reject that deal. And if they do, then the country, I think, will look negatively at Parliament rejecting what they will perceive as a deal that is good for Britain.
Nadeem, thank you for joining us. But can you tell us finally what time are we going to get the vote? Is it clear?
It's imminent, because I think you're about to hear the division bell, because there's been no vote on the Northern Irish legislation. I'm looking at the green screen, and it says points of order.
Yes,
now.
Yes. We'd better let you go, and thank you so much for finding time to join us. Nadeem Sahawi, Member of Parliament for Stratford-on-Avon and Minister for Business and Industry. So we've had a Labour perspective, we've had a Conservative perspective on what's going on. Now, do we need a general election? That is the question. And how will Boris Johnson get us through yet another impasse in Parliament? I'm told, if you read the Evening Standard, he's running out of options. Does Mr. Johnson need to resign? Can he get a new deal? Let me know what your thoughts on what we're discussing tonight. As I say, you've heard from Labour, you've heard from Conservatives. Let's hear from you. Call 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio. The time has just gone 10:45.
Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions. This is Talk Radio.
I think we're all being too polite tonight. I actually think we should be getting quite angry about what is happening. We're going to see, yet again, Parliament stop us having a general election tonight, when the government, you know, the ones who are meant to have launched the coup against democracy, are calling for an election. We should be having an election, because Parliament is, in effect, ignoring the referendum. It is denying those 17.4 million voters. In fact, it's denying every voter in effect, who took part in that referendum. It is denying them the outcome of that referendum. It has gone to extraordinary lengths to do it. And yet, I think we're kind of been very British about it. We're taking it in our stride. The fact of the matter is that we should have come out on March 29th. There's a whole history of failings as to why we didn't come out on the 29th. That has continued to the point now where, since we've had a new Prime Minister who has said to the House of Commons, we are coming out on the 31st of October, come what may, we are implementing the will of the referendum. And he is now being frustrated by Parliament. Now, look, I had the pleasure of serving for 5 years as an MP. I understand that when you're in Parliament, you are sent there as a representative and you are there to use your judgment and you are there to vote. And at the end of that process, you, the voters, in a general election decide if you like what your MP has done or not, and you kick him out or you kick her out or you re-elect him or you re-elect her. But this referendum, this was Parliament saying, we're going to let you decide. Parliament always takes decisions on our behalf. But on this one occasion, Parliament said, you, the people, decide. The government spent several million or quid telling us that they would implement what we decided. And yet, today, here we are, 38 months after the referendum. We are not out. The actual prospect of coming out on the 31st of October is actually receding because Parliament, in its wisdom, has decided to ignore the instruction of the British people and say, nobody voted for no deal, so we're going to use that as an excuse to block Brexit. Well, I'll tell you what. Lots of people knew entirely what they're voting for, and they did it on your instruction, MPs. You told the people that they should decide whether we remain or leave in the EU. You delegated that decision, and now, like so many other European countries have faced when they've had a referendum, you, the politicians, do not like the answer, and you are blocking the UK coming out of Parliament. Actually, what we're going to do now is keep an eye on that Parliament because Boris Johnson is speaking. We'll bring him up.
And gain royal assent, and then he said, we will back an election. Well, the Surrender Bill, the Surrender Act has now passed. It has gained royal assent. He has done his level best to wreck this chance, this country's chances of a successful negotiation. By his own logic, he must now back an election. And so, Mr. Speaker, I am retabling the motion for an early date general election. I don't want an election. I hope this step would be unnecessary. Yet I have accepted the reality that an election is the only way to break the deadlock in the House and to serve the national interest by giving whoever is Prime Minister the strongest possible mandate to negotiate for our country at next month's European Council. Labour, too, have accepted this reality in their own leaflets this weekend. This weekend, they say, we need a general election now. We need a general election now. That's what it says. And yet, throughout the weekend, the Right Honourable Gentleman's cronies, together with those of other opposition parties, have been trying to disguise their preposterous cowardice by coming up with ever more outrageous excuses for delaying an election until the end of October or perhaps November or when hell freezes over. In the dither, delay and procrastination that has become the hallmark of the opposition. Why are they conniving to delay Brexit in defiance of the referendum, costing the country an extra £250 million a week for the privilege, £250 million a week for the privilege of delay, enough to upgrade more than five hospitals?
We're listening to Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, who's effectively launching his case why there should be a general election. And we're going to stick with him for a little longer.
secure a renewed mandate to take this country out of the EU, a policy they now oppose. And that is the sorry tale of this opposition in this parliament. For the last 3 years, they have schemed to overturn the verdict of the British people, delivered in a referendum, which in a crowning irony, almost all of them voted to hold. In fact, Mr. Speaker, they didn't just vote to hold it. Some of them even, I'll give way with pleasure to the Honourable Lady.
Thank you for the Prime Minister for giving me way. I'm really pleased that he's chosen to give me an intervention. But he's here reading off the fact that the amount of money that is being spent going into Europe could pay for nurses and could upgrade hospitals. Of austerity has led to our NHS being funded. 9 years of austerity has led to our education services being failed. 9 years of austerity has led to 4 million children living in poverty. So all you need to do, Prime Minister, is move forward.
Well, you're listening to an intervention there, which obviously MPs like to do just to get their two pennies worth in. I don't think it's actually added anything to the debate. Boris Johnson was making a case which I recognise a striking theme in some of the points I was making, so I'm rather pleased about that. Now, let's see if he continues to support the idea that it is Parliament that is stopping the British people having a general election and completing Brexit. Back to Boris Johnson.
But some of them, the Liberal Democrats, also called for a referendum on our membership of the EU. And once they got it, and by the way, they lost that referendum, of course, they did nothing but try to overturn the result, arrogating to themselves the authority to decide which democratic elections they respect and which they reject. Now, Mr. Speaker, where are they, the Liberal Democrats? There they are. They want a second referendum, but they're already planning to campaign against the result. When asked whether she would implement Brexit if the people voted for it a second time, the party's new leader replied, no. Every time the Liberal Democrats lose a referendum, they just call for a new one over and over again. And I must say, it turns out that the Honourable Member for Dunbartonshire East is the, as it were, the new leader of the referendum party, the Jimmy Goldsmith of our times. But they are models of coherence by comparison, Mr. Speaker, with the leader of the opposition. His strategy, mysterious as it is, is that by some process he becomes Prime Minister, but he went without an election, since he's against elections. He then goes to Brussels and negotiates a new deal, presumably keeping us in the customs union and in the single market. He then comes back and passes that deal through the House, then takes it to the country in a second referendum, whereupon he campaigns against his own deal and urges That's the plan, isn't it? But perhaps you clarify. And then urges the nation to reject his own handiwork. Mr. Speaker, we know the real reason why Labour don't want a general election. We know what.
Well, I think we've got the gist of what the Prime Minister Boris Johnson was saying there in the House of Commons as he launches his case why he feels a general election is the right thing to do. I should say the House of Commons is absolutely packed for this. It is, of course, going to be the last debate before Parliament is prorogued or suspended to you and me. And I'm guessing that actually we probably won't get a result, quite possibly for a couple of hours. I don't think this is a time-limited debate, but then I haven't been keeping up with all the detail. It's going to be fiery, and we will return to it, hopefully to catch something from the leader of the opposition to explain why he doesn't want a general election, which every time I say that, I think I must be on another planet, because leaders of oppositions want to be prime ministers. Therefore, if you are offered a general election, which is the way to become prime minister, you should seize it. But Jeremy Corbyn has a rather warped view, obviously, of how to proceed. I want to hear what you think about whether we should have a general election or not. Some people may argue that a general election won't solve anything. Well, you might feel a referendum does. We've heard from the professionals, we've heard from the politicians on this, but you can call me, of course, on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio or at Nick Dubois to let me know your views. I suspect that this is going to roll on for probably the duration we're here until 1 o'clock. I shall probably be leaving you at the time the MPs are leaving the House. However, I fear they are going to reject once again letting democracy take place in the shape of a general election. Remember, this is a parliament that has denied putting in place the verdict of the people in a referendum. Fundamentally, that is what we are talking about. And it is Boris Johnson who wants a general election to give you, the people, the say. What do you think? You can call on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
Well, welcome back. And with me is Joe Twyman, founder of Delta Poll. Joe, we just heard Boris Johnson set out his case why he wants a general election. It's pretty much as we suspected. It's very much a case of you've frustrated the will of the people. You've frustrated them twice with the referendum. You're now doing it again with a general election. Come on, man up and have an election. He's really building this idea that he really is pushing it out there that I'm the man that wants election. I am the man who's fighting for the people. I think this is really your premise you were making before. That's what he's going to go to an election on, isn't it?
Yes, and it makes sense for him. He has experience of the Vote Leave campaign, which he, of course, was very closely involved with. He knows how powerful the argument of taking back control is. He knows how it emotionally resonates with the electorate. It doesn't just connect with them in their head, but in their heart as well. And so that's something he will be pushing time and again, I think, from now onwards. And I wouldn't be surprised if we hear time and again how, remember, I tried to call an election, wasn't allowed, and I was prevented, etc.
Well, I know over here in the UK, some are baffled, some are confused, some are angry, some are passionate. Well, most are passionate. And we are, of course, divided. Now, what we don't hear quite so often is what our friends and our allies across the water think. And I'm not talking about across the water in the Atlantic. I'm talking across the North Sea. And we've got joining us Tim De Witt, who is the correspondent for the Dutch national broadcaster NOS. Tim, good evening and thank you for joining us.
Good evening, Nick. Thank you.
Well, look, Tim, I often think we make a mistake in this country is that occasionally we need to take a breath and just look from the other end of the telescope and see what's making our allies and friends tick. But more importantly, what are they at the moment making of what is going on over here, particularly in these last 2 weeks when to some we've had a revolution, we've had a coup, we've silenced democracy, and to others we are implementing the will of the people. Help me out.
Yeah, well, it's very confusing for Dutch people to really get a grip on what is exactly going on, especially if they see the comments unraveling as we've seen in the last week. And with all these votes where you see a prime minister struggling to get anything through parliament, losing his majority, fighting with people well known in the Netherlands, people like Ken Clark or Philip Hammond, losing the whip of seeing the whip withdrawn from them. And that's, so it's a very hard kind of situation for people to get a grip on. But the overall sense is what on earth is going on and why are politicians in the UK having such a hard time to make a decision? Because everybody in the Netherlands just want to know whether the UK is leaving the EU or not. It's not that simple, obviously, but that's kind of the common sense or the feeling people have in the Netherlands.
Tim, I hear all of that, and I can well believe that's exactly the sentiment over there. But does it ever get discussed that and maybe that it's reflected, is that people are saying, well, you had a referendum. You said you were going to leave. Why isn't the government just getting on and leaving? Is there support for the idea of a referendum? Because they have a bit of a checkered history, these referendums on EU matters.
Yeah, no, true. And you're absolutely right with that, Nick, because we had a referendum in the Netherlands about that European constitution, as you might remember, in 2005.
Pre-Treaty of Nice, wasn't it, I think?
Exactly, yeah. And it was overwhelmingly rejected by the Dutch public at the time. I think it was about 60-65% even of the people voted against that. And also the Netherlands saw, or the Dutch people saw, that European constitution was named differently a few years later and implemented as the Treaty of Lisbon. And there was a lot of anger, actually, especially within the Netherlands. So they felt the same, like we had a referendum and our voice was just being neglected. And so obviously there is this sense in the Netherlands as well. Like we saw that a majority of the British people voted to leave the EU. But what people find hard to say, and the Netherlands is, as you know, a country which is built on compromise. I mean, to give you an idea, at the moment, we have a four-party coalition.
Tim, I do apologise. I think our producers warned you this might happen. If you don't mind staying on the line, we're just going to take a few words from Jeremy Corbyn, who's now got up in the debate.
Him to ask for an extension under certain circumstances. He also, Mr. Speaker, gave no answer to the two decisions this House has already made today concerning the publication of Yellowhammer documents and his own behaviour as Prime Minister in respect of laws agreed by this House. Because the Prime Minister failingly seemed to grasp that opposition benches have actually been very clear. The House, Mr. Speaker, has expressed its will until the Act has been complied with and no deal has been taken off the table. No deal taken off the table. We will not vote to support the dissolution of this House and a general election. Now, I want an election, Mr. Speaker, as the Prime Minister pointed out. And the Conservative Party has very generously broadcast footage of me and my friends saying that we want an election. I don't retreat from that at all. We're eager for an election. But as keen as we are not prepared to risk inflicting the disaster of no deal on us, our communities, our jobs, our services, or indeed our rights. Mr. Speaker, no deal would not be a clean break. It would not mean just getting on with it. It would start a whole new period of confusion and delay. But this time, Mr. Speaker, set against a backdrop of rising unemployment, further deindustrialisation, and of deepening poverty all across this country.
Order. Order. I said a moment ago the Prime Minister should not be shouted down.
I think we'll leave Jeremy Corbyn there because almost inevitably the Speaker likes to get on his feet for these big occasions, but I won't go there. Not long for him before he moves on to greater things. We've been joined by Tim de Wit, correspondent for Dutch national broadcaster NOS. Tim, you were in the middle of explaining something there. I'm sorry for cutting you off, but just listening to Jeremy Corbyn there and all the jeering and noise going on in the background. Is our Parliament prime time viewing? Is it down as a comedy programme or is it just watched with fascination?
There is obviously still a lot of fascination for what happens in the Commons. It's not a political culture we have in the Netherlands where debates are pretty boring to watch, to be honest. I mean, it's always very well organised and our speaker is always listened to and people don't shout through each other. You know, the things we see in the UK are absolutely completely uncommon in the Netherlands. So it's always a bit of theatre, which what we like about the UK and what we appreciate. But the hard thing to see at the moment is what this shouting brings us. You know, it feels there is too much theatre at the moment and not enough decision making and cutting through the mess we're in at the moment.
Tim, I'd like to just go back to one thing we were touching on before we broke for Jeremy Corbyn there for a, sure. for a few minutes, was you were talking about, we were talking about previous referendums and how in Holland, quite a few people, were pretty upset at the time about what happened with the treaty of the Nice and the constitution, all history now. But I met, I used to live in Holland and I have some Dutch friends, and, one or two of them said to me, you know, actually, we'd quite like to do what you're doing to come out, but we're just too small. We're not big enough nation to punch our weight. Is there any broad level of support? Clearly not a majority for deep Euroscepticism, yeah. Or would it go further? Is there a cohort that would leave?
Well, if you look at, for example, recent elections, we had the European elections as well, obviously in May. And you could see there's roughly about 20% of the population are voting for parties who have leaving the EU within their manifesto. So that gives you probably an answer to your question. But to be honest, since Brexit, the number actually went down.
Yes.
So the appreciation for the EU actually went up in the Netherlands.
Which some say Michel Barnier's goal of success was to put others off the idea.
Exactly, and that's exactly what happened in the Netherlands, and you've seen that all over the EU with a lot of countries, even in countries like Germany, France, where actually the number of Eurosceptics actually went down. So from that perspective, Michel Barnier did probably a pretty good job. I don't think everybody agrees with me on that one in the UK, but from a EU perspective, and I know obviously much of the Netherlands or a lot of the Netherlands is that it's not that Brexit is being seen as an example to follow.
Tim, thank you very much for that. I'm afraid it's unfortunate timing, but that was Tim DeWitt, correspondent for Dutch National Broadcaster, NOS. But it's getting quite lively. Jeremy Corbyn in the House of Commons. Jeremy Corbyn has just been on his feet and said the PM is running away from scrutiny. Let's catch up with what's going on.
Gives no mandate for that. And, Mr. Speaker, the co-convener of the Vote Leave campaign said in March this year, and I quote, "We didn't vote to leave without a deal." He is now the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster. No deal is opposed by every business group, every industry group, every trade union, and has been opposed in votes in this House. I want to turf out this reckless government. This government that is driving up poverty, deepening inequality, scapegoating migrants, whipping up divisions, and failing this country. A general election isn't something for the Prime Minister to play about with for propaganda points or even his very poor quality posts on social media. So perhaps the Prime Minister can, which could be the last time in this session of Parliament, answer some questions. Firstly...
Order, Mr. Phil. You're very loud and rancorous. Calm down, young man. You're getting very overexcited. Very, very overexcited.
Goodness me. We're talking about bad tweets of the Prime Minister. You know, no wonder the Dutch find it amusing. And yet it's the biggest, most serious subject we're all facing. Joe, what do you make of this?
Well, it's been a fascinating day. And in many ways, this debate now and the discussion is the least interesting bit of the entire day. I think it's widely assumed that this will go to a vote that will not lead to a general election. And so all of this discussion, arguments, rancor and quite frankly, weird comments will simply be all for nothing. But we do have the news that John Bercow is leaving. I think that's a really interesting
question. Trying to restrain myself from making some absolutely unprofessional remark.
Well,
some will miss him.
What I will say is I think it would be very sad if, as a result of John Bercow leaving, we had an increasingly politicised speaker position.
Well, I totally agree with that. I think in many ways I've defended John Bercow publicly on many things because he actually got backbenchers in to speak. The previous speaker was awful. He never got through the order paper. That's the list of questions. He gave ministers virtually a free run. John Bercow has done a great job in that. And I think, though, he's just lost the confidence of a large chunk of the House. And the new Speaker's job is to rebuild that and the objectivity.
Yes, I agree. It will be interesting to see who gets it. And then we had a vote on revealing the details of the government's advice on Brexit. This has been something that's been hotly debated among those in Westminster.
But we're
recently.
Not talking about bland documents. We're talking also about WhatsApp, phone messages, emails, this sort of stuff, aren't we?
Yes, absolutely. And I think this is I think this is a very bad thing.
I'm terrified. I'm trying to remember what I put on my WhatsApp when I was special advisor at the Department for Exiting the Union.
Well, I mean, let's think about how recently when diplomatic cables were leaked and the candid views of the US ambassador, sorry, the British ambassador in Washington, were revealed. That did not go down well, particularly with Donald Trump, who was described in unglowing terms, shall we say.
So, come on, let's take a step back. Just help me out here. Why has this happened? Why today has there been another debate that's gone against the government that says reveal all these cosy little text messages and things you've been having, Mr. Cummings, Prime Minister, and anyone else?
Well, it all goes back to the fact that the government had received reports on the impact of on the possible impact of Brexit from civil servants and others, as well as advisers, and all of that information, plus all of the supporting information, so the communications, etc., and all the advice that ministers had received, will now be released after it being repeatedly called for by the opposition. Now, the government has said, actually, it's not right to release these things. People may misinterpret them. People may view them in a negative light when they're not meant to be that. They may be setting out worst-case scenarios, not necessarily realistic scenarios, etc. Most interesting to me is the fact that a few MPs have come out tonight and said, back when the Freedom of Information Act was being created in 2000,
yes,
this kind of advice was specifically not included, yeah, in that, because
they had this idea also that it would freeze discussions. It would have a cooling effect on people giving their advice as well.
Exactly, which was the comments made around the diplomatic cables from coming out of Washington. I don't think this is necessarily a good thing that it is released, and I worry that at such a crucial time, the candor and indeed the general discussion around Brexit could be stupefied moving forward.
Well, we might come back to that later, but before we just have a quick break, I want to tease you all in case you haven't seen it. John Bercow's departure did bring comment from a certain MEP, Guy Verhofstadt. This is Talk Radio Live with me, Nick Dubois. You join us on yet another monumental night as Boris Johnson announces he does not want, no, I think he does want a general election, even though he's claiming that he wouldn't really want to do it. But it's the only way to break the deadlock, if you understood that, well done. And after the break, I'll let you know what Guy Verhofstadt has been saying about our parliament.
No nonsense discussion.
It's Speech Radio, Jim.
This is Talk Radio.
This is Talk Radio, live with me, Nick Dubois, and joining me in the studio is Joe Twyman, founder of Delta Poll. Now, I tormented you with another intervention by Guy Verhofstadt, the leading MEP, member of the European Parliament, who I think has a responsibility for Brexit in the European Parliament. Not they can do very much except make lots of noise. And this is what he tweeted a few hours ago on the news that John Bercow was resigning. John Bercow is a driven speaker, he said, and gifted orator, but above all, the keeper of the great British parliamentary tradition. Here it comes. I would love if we could welcome him in the European Commission or European Parliament. He then winked, but I'm not so sure it's a joke. Listen, Mr. Verhofstadt, by the way, thanks, John, for tweeting that to me. Listen, Mr. Verhofstadt, if you have so much respect for the British Parliament, Why don't you respect the fact that they rejected the withdrawal agreement that you keep insisting should not be reopened for discussions? If you have respect for the British Parliament, why don't you actually understand that the executive has to have parliamentary support for a withdrawal agreement, an international agreement, to go through? And they rejected it. The one thing, Mr. Verhofstadt, that the British Parliament did accept was actually a withdrawal agreement without the backstop, with alternative arrangements that would not be time limited. So don't come on Twitter telling us how much you respect a British Parliament when either you don't understand it, my dear chap, or perhaps worse, you don't respect the votes from it. Meanwhile, Phil Thomas, he's tweeted to say, "Hi Nick, it's Phil in Paintham. The electorate are fed up with this Brexit nonsense. We voted leave and the idiots in Parliament," it's a bit harsh, but, you know, I was called that several times, "keep blocking our exit. Boris has pledged to get us out. He can't negotiate a deal with his hands tied behind his back. Leave means leave." And as John tweets to say, "How will we trust anything that is written in their manifestos in future?" All legitimate points. And if you've got a view, you can share it with me by tweeting at Talk Radio or at Nick Dubois, D-E-B-O-I-S, in case your French is not up to scratch. We can go back to the Houses of Parliament, where we've just heard a heated exchange between the Prime Minister and Jeremy Corbyn.
I'd like to know, Mr. Speaker, if the Honourable Gentleman wishes to avoid a no-deal Brexit, why does he not call an election, get a mandate, go to Brussels and negotiate a deal himself? What's his objection to that?
Because, Mr. Speaker, we're the responsible party in this room. We don't want to crash out with no deal. And there is also, Mr. Speaker, the issue, of course, of trust in a Prime Minister who is unable to answer any questions and is desperate to suspend Parliament to avoid any scrutiny.
So, Jeremy Corbyn accusing Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, of suspending Parliament, proroguing Parliament to avoid scrutiny there. Joe, you know, do you think that cuts any ice with the public?
I think it can potentially, but a lot of this noise around Westminster in either direction really fails to cut through. Instead, it's the broad overall stories that we tell ourselves and each other, what we call in the business narratives, these narratives that are most important. And narratives around Brexit and around leaders are developed not over individual arguments like this, but over weeks and months as the situation evolves. And these sorts of events have a cumulative effect. But I think this is really only the beginning of what we're starting to see.
You see, I suppose something like this might have legs if it emerges that there's information that the Prime Minister did his best to keep secret and then comes out, which you might have as be as a result of the vote earlier today. Then people might think there were alternative reasons for proroguing Parliament.
Yes, absolutely. But what we see time and again nowadays is that people's views and opinions are so often led by what we call priors. In other words, these ideas we already have in our heads. And Brexit, and whether you're a Remainer or a Leaver, is one of the most important of those as things stand at the moment. What that means is, if you're a Leaver and you hear these things about Boris Johnson, you may very well just dismiss it and think it doesn't matter. If you're a Remainer, it will simply reinforce the negative view that you had of him already. We're not absorbing the information. We're simply sort of accepting it or discounting it, depending on our views.
But in a way, that's a reflection of how polarised we are, that people, I have debates with friends, with other presenters on this station, where we have opposing views, and we're almost guilty ourselves of actually almost believing in accepting what suits your argument, rather than necessarily stop, think, challenge, and then decide on validity of it. But that's asking too much, isn't it? Isn't that, we're beyond that now. It's, I want out, I want in.
It does appear that we are beyond, in many ways, the moments of compromise,
reflection and debate that I think this whole process could sorely, sorely use.
But, you know, as I was saying that, I was saying how polarised we are, it's more and more of me thinking that's why this general election is crucial, because it will give voice to, if you like, the voters, the ultimate people who hold sovereignty. But of course, there's a danger that it won't solve anything.
Exactly. It will give voice to the voters, but for what? Will it actually solve many of the problems, even if a majority is achieved, which looks unlikely? Would it solve the problems? I don't think so. 3 years ago, people voted to leave the European Union because, yes, they were dissatisfied with the European Union, but more widely, that was symptomatic of a greater malaise. People were dissatisfied, yes, but also distrusting and disapproving, not just of the European Union, but of politicians,
Joe, for surely that is the big, in a way, we're past the arguments about will it cost you money in your pocket if you leave the EU, or no deal, etc. It's now about democracy, surely, because this is now polarised around both the democratic vote in the first place, the referendum. It's now polarising around should we have an election, shouldn't we have an election, do we believe our politicians in Parliament are doing what they should, which is respecting the world. You know, it seems to me that this is a huge crisis of confidence in politicians, which will be even worse if we don't come out.
Yeah, and this is my point. Nothing that has happened in the last 3 years has done anything to convince those people who were so dissatisfied, distrusting and disapproving that the political class deserves anything other than their contempt. They have seen repeated attempts to pass some form of Brexit unsuccessfully. They have seen various sorts of manoeuvres, of which the general election may be seen as simply another one. And all the time, the clock ticks and it takes longer and longer for anything to happen.
But, you know,
for these people's concerns to be addressed.
If I'm unhappy with something and I'm fed up with something, I've lost faith in something, I kind of give it up or go on the attack at some point. And yet we're going to be asking people to vote in this whole system again in probably 2 months' time at the latest. Surely, why doesn't it translate what you've just told me about how people are feeling about the system, how let down they're feeling by it? Why does it still translate to them into voting?
Because a lot of people feel an obligation to vote. They feel a duty to vote.
Well, good for them.
And they think that that it is important. And so particularly for general elections, they think that's important. The question is, will that hold next time around? Because in certain constituencies, I imagine it will be a real struggle where people look at the parties available to them and think, actually, none of these represent my views. None of these will be good for me and people like me. And we may see, and that will almost certainly be on both sides of the debate.
Which is why we're going to get into a very strange election, I suspect.
Quite.
You guys are really going to have to earn your money when you come up with snapshot polls, aren't you? And I know we're not meant to forecast anything, but we all do.
Well,
you know,
I don't.
Yeah, we do. We all do. And you know what it's like if we see a poll, everyone goes running to their computers to work out what it means for them in their seat or whatever. You're really going to have to work hard, you know.
I can't wait. My excitement knows absolutely nothing. No beginning.
Absolutely. Well, if you've thoughts on anything we're talking about this evening on Talk Radio, call me on 0344 499 1000. This is Talk Radio live with me, Nick Dubois.
Supercharged current affairs debate and electrifying opinion. This is Talk Radio.
Now, I need to park my frustration with the democratic process. I need to park my growing irritation that Parliament insists on ignoring referendum results, insists on ignoring, well, it will do, I suspect, ignoring yet another call for a general election, and turn our minds back to this morning when we had the sight of our Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, on his first visit to Dublin to meet the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, in what was quite an interesting meeting, in the sense that we really heard Boris Johnson, I think, for the first time, talking almost enthusiastically about the need for a deal. He talked about the failure of statecraft, which I think he means is the failure of politicians and perhaps diplomats, to strike a deal. We heard a very punchy Leo Varadkar, still insisting that the backstop was there to remain. What people make of that, I don't know, but I think I know a man who might. And we have Bernard Purcell on the line, editor of Irish World. Bernard, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Good evening, Nick. It's a pleasure.
Well, look, I think the temptation whenever we have a conversation about the backstop is to get into a lot of the intricacies of some of the claims and counterclaims about what could be in its place or otherwise. What I'd appreciate, first of all, though, from you is an understanding, perhaps, that we may not have on in the UK, but more so on the mainland, of why the backstop is being the hard and fast rock of Leo Varadkar's, if you like, approach to this, when in fact I think he's taken quite a bit of flak for some of the consequences of no deal if that's what happens.
Well, there's a couple of factors in play. For the EU, aside from their interest in wanting to see the peace dividends of the last 20 years continue in Northern Ireland, it's also worried about the integrity of the single market. But from an Irish point of view, essentially the border's been invisible for a long time. I mean, people go to hospital appointments, they go to jobs, they go on either side of the border. It is effectively invisible. It's disappeared. Nobody is pushing for a 32. Nobody of any note other than Sinn Féin, I should say, is pushing for a 32-county island of Ireland. There is a practical Irish solution to an Irish problem that was brought about with lots of goodwill by the British government, successive British governments, assisted by the EU and by Washington. Now, if you introduce two different regulatory regimes on the one island, you will inevitably have to have infrastructure. That infrastructure will be like a red rag to various kind of interests in Northern Ireland who have, for the most part, gone away. But nobody wants to see them get a purchase again. Leo Varadkar did say today that Ireland is not opposed in principle to any other practical solutions, but they haven't been made, despite all the claims that negotiations are going well. Anyone in Brussels will tell you that no, there haven't been any serious proposals. Dominic Raab has said that they can't put them on paper because they don't want them to leak or they don't want people to know about them. And so there have not been any particularly serious concrete proposals there for analysis and for discussion. And if you go back to 2017, when the withdrawal agreement was originally mooted and the backstop was inserted at the request of the British government, quite specifically at the request of the British government, Theresa May turned around and breached what had been agreed with the assurances. So trust has gone, and Leo Varadkar not only said that when he said that they will not accept promises, it has to be binding, it has to be legal, there has to be protection. But he also used classics back at Boris Johnson, because he said that getting the free trade agreements and getting them ratified in the space of a couple of years would be a Herculean task. And he said he wanted Ireland to actually be Athena to Boris Johnson or Britain's Hercules. In other words, it's an allusion to when Hercules went mad, killed his children, and she intervened to try and protect him, prevent him killing even more people.
Yes, yes. I think that was lost on a few people, and I had to look it up as well. So I count myself as the ignorant amongst that when that was made. Look,
that's why Brewer's phrase and fable is an essential tool for all of us.
Look, if you were to go back to basics, and I know there's an argument over here that there's a belief that even some Conservatives might not accept the withdrawal agreement coming back even without the backstop. One of the key problems with the backstop, of course, was it wasn't time limited, and the UK could not exit, and it was on its own accord, and it therefore was binding itself to a decision from another power, if you like, to agree when it could leave the terms of the backstop. And although we heard today about, you know, perhaps a single market for agriculture and food, a sort of east-west, if you like, situation just for Ireland, the island of Ireland, we don't hear anything about the time limiting. And is that just simply off the table? It will not be seen as a backstop if there is a time limit to it.
The Irish point of view in terms of a time limit is, well, having seen the kind of breach of trust that
has been on display for the last 18 months and certainly the last year, is it couldn't be accepted. What would be, if say, well, it's 24 months, what would be to stop the British government, or whatever ilk is in there, unilaterally and arbitrarily decided, well, no, we are going to resile from that. So it is intended as an insurance. And certainly that is the whole idea, certainly entered into good faith, is not to try and trap
not to trigger it
into, yes, not to get to that point. It cannot be beyond the wit of sovereign nations acting in good faith to actually have time and space to come up with agreements. One of the problems as perceived from, say, the Irish government, which started its Brexit preparations in 2015, I hasten to add, for a referendum that happened in 2016, didn't fully expect that it would go the way it did, but thought it best to be prepared. And similarly, you had preparations being made in the EU, is that there was no preparation, that false promises have been made, promises that are in some cases mutually exclusive or undeliverable, raising expectations when something that is of, once has any kind of contact with the reality, you see that there has to be some kind of pros and cons, and for the most part it would appear to be cons, in leaving the EU. But that is respected, but the fact that there was no acceptance, recognition or preparation for what is a very complicated multilateral set of agreements, relationships and laws.
But Bernard, isn't there an element of self-harm in this, though? Because if there is difficulty in understanding the UK position, that signing up to the backstop and having to seek permission effectively of another power is just not acceptable. I don't think I can think of a treaty like this where any peacetime country would have signed up to something like that. And understanding also our parliamentary system, that if Parliament has rejected this deal three times, as Theresa May tried and tried again, it just is not going to go through. So there's this horrible sort of Groundhog Day moment. But the outcome would be pretty serious for Ireland as well. And I always feel, I always sense that when the charge is made, it's up to you, the UK, to come to the table because you made the decision to leave. That may be accurate, but it's not very practical. Isn't there a sense of, hang on, Ireland, we need to do something here as well. It's in our interest.
Ireland has been making preparations.
For no deal, yes. But not to get a deal. Not to try and help get a deal.
It would argue, and I'm not a spokesman for the Irish government, it did facilitate a deal as one of the EU 27 with the withdrawal agreement, and that all of the provisions spoken for are in there. The only reason, in the belief of many Irish diplomats and politicians, that the backstop has become any kind of issue is because of the rather flukish position in which Theresa May found herself at the mercy of 10 DUP MPs.
Sure.
Now with a Commons majority of minus 44, those 10 MPs are looking less useful. And it has been put out by some quarters in Downing Street that Boris, sources familiar with Boris Johnson's thinking, say that it would not be quite so harmful to have a line down the Irish Sea, the so-called Ireland border, in which for most ordinary people would just be invisible. It would not have any impact on their lives. And we're beginning to see at least some positioning from the DUP that if there's a Stormont element, that Stormont can be seen to have some kind of input into this all-Ireland regulatory arrangement, well then it won't be quite as bad. But the ERG has seized on this with the likes of Andrew Bridgen and Mark Francois, saying that they will, even if they get the backstop resolved, they're not going to accept any kind of agreement.
So you would suggest that there's a calculation going on that actually the Conservative Party might not bring all the Conservatives with them. By the way, the ERG is not one homogenous group, and it wouldn't be all of the ERG, I suspect, because they even split in their vote in Parliament on the third attempt to go through. But the trade-off would be they think they could get more Labour through. But that would be huge political capital invested by Boris Johnson to actually try and get a modified withdrawal agreement. So those sources... Go on, sorry.
the irony in this kind of topsy-turvy world is that the people who hold Boris Johnson's political fate in their hands are in fact the Remainers and the soft Brexiteers, and they would be the people who could, if that's the route they want to go, who could deliver a modified version of the withdrawal agreement.
Well, Bern, very interesting talking to you. And as I say on this programme, we do try to get the views from outside of the United Kingdom as well of our partners and our allies so that we understand what other people are thinking rather than have tunnel vision. That was Bernard Purcell, editor of Irish World, who joined us to give a perspective on both today's meeting between Boris Johnson and Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach. The debate is still cracking on in Parliament. I'm not actually sure if anything interesting is said. One thing I should tell you about debates in Parliament is that everyone often, well, not everyone, a lot of people will stand up and say, isn't it terrible? There's no one in the chamber. Well, the bottom line is, generally, after the main speeches and perhaps two or three thereafter, pretty much everything that's said has been said, and it's very rare you get a contribution that will be of interest sufficient to warrant everyone staying in the chamber. Now, you might say that's pretty awful because this is a pretty important debate, and I can give you some comfort looking at the screens. They seem reasonably busy, don't they, Joe?
Yeah, I think a good three quarters full.
Yeah, I think so. And that's Bob Seeley is up at the moment, the member for Isle of Wight. And I think essentially everyone's standing up trying to get through the main speeches from all the relative party leaders. And then I think we'll see some dissipation as we head towards a vote. This is Talk Radio with me, Nick Dubois. You join us as MPs, as I say, are debating a motion put forward by Boris Johnson calling for an early general election. Well, I wish. Sadly, I don't think that's going to happen. It's a bit odd, isn't it, really? We're all sitting here talking about it, trying to guess the outcome when we all know the outcome. It's almost like the MPs shouldn't bother, isn't it? We do await the result, however, of this debate on whether the Prime Minister can get enough support. We'll bring you that, of course, live here on Talk Radio. I should say, I think we'll bring it to you live here on Talk Radio, because if it comes after 1 o'clock, it won't be me. But we would like your thoughts on tonight's debate and what we are discussing. Do call on 0344 499 1000 or tweet me at Nick Dubois or at Talk Radio.
Feel the forthright fury
across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
This is Nick Dubois, live until 1am, bringing you the latest on MPs debating whether there should be an early general election or not. And of course, we will bring you the result live here on Talk Radio. That's certain. Whether I'll be able to do it before 1 o'clock, that is not very certain at all. But I think we're going to pop over to the House of Commons here. I think the Speaker's on his feet, but we were listening to Joe Swinson, the leader of the Liberal Democrats.
Because we are crystal clear on Brexit. We want to stop Brexit, and that's why thousands of people across the country are joining the Liberal Democrats, including MPs from both the Labour and the Conservative parties. Now, whether it's votes in this House or ministerial colleagues, the Prime Minister is making a habit of losing. And although I believe that a people's vote is the best route to resolve this, I say to the Prime Minister, he can have his general election as soon as he secures an extension. Because otherwise, we risk the scenario where there is a general election where we might crash out of the European Union without a deal, either during or in the immediate aftermath of such an election, and with Parliament not sitting at those crucial moments. It would be the height of irresponsibility to dissolve Parliament at that time. Any general election must be undertaken in a period of calm, with an orderly approach, not in a period of national crisis. The Prime Minister is playing at this. In his speech tonight, he made it sound like this was sport, like this was a game. This is not a student debating society. This is about the national interest, about being sure that we avoid the risk of a no-deal Brexit, and that's why we will vote down his motion tonight.
Well, that was Jo Swinson giving her opinion on things and again explaining why, yes, they want a general election, but actually, no, they don't. Now, Joe, got a question for you here.
We get polls all the time, and as I said, we all look at them as a guide to the future. You just remind us they're a snapshot of what thinking is at the moment. But when's kind of the next big moment in politics where opinion polls will be able to tell us how people have responded? So is it after tonight when Parliament's prorogued? What's the next big potential moment to measure a change in opinion?
Well, there's a sort of little big moment, and then there's going to be a big, big moment. The little big moment, I think, will be the Queen's speech. So when Parliament returns after the party conference season. The party conference season, traditionally, it's always a bit of a weird period for polls anyway, because you have each of the parties getting their moment in the limelight.
You get a bit of bounce every now and then, don't
you? You get a bit of bounce, bit of movement. Of course, this year will be very different in that respect. And in fact, goodness only knows what the party conferences are going to look
like. Well, in fact, the Conservatives, Boris Johnson, if he spends like 4 or 5 days at a party conference, he could get a lot of stick for that, given where we are in the sort of negotiation period.
I imagine he will fly in, give a couple of speeches, attend a couple of fringe events, and then leg it.
To make sure the optics are good.
To make sure the optics are good, but also it's worth remembering for the listeners at home that political parties make a huge amount of money from these conferences, and they certainly can't afford financially to not go through with them. But there's after the party conferences, as I say, we have the Queen's speech. But I think the big, big moment will be the 31st of October, because when Theresa May missed the deadline back in March, that's when there was a big change then. I imagine that there'll be a similar impact this time, because suddenly all of the coverage is about that. And as I say, we go from the distinction between the promise of Brexit that Boris Johnson offers in advance of that date to running on his track record of what he has or indeed has not delivered after that date.
Now, many of us and I'm sure most of our listeners will probably be pretty tuned to what's happening, i.e. the understanding is Boris really is trying to come out on the 31st of October, but Parliament's binding his hands. And therefore, I wouldn't have expected to see much shift in the polls. But I suspect you're going to tell me, to most people out there who are thinking about politics, you know, maybe 30 seconds a minute a day, the issue is, have they understood why Boris Johnson is not going to be able to come out on the 31st of October and go for an extension or not?
The average person in the street, and indeed the 50% of people less engaged than the average person in the street, isn't paying much attention to the detail of this. Instead, they are interested, if they're interested at all, in the broad outcome. So what's going to happen? And in a sense, the next few weeks are about convincing that group one way or the other. All of the political parties will be attempting to spin this situation in their favour. And that means the Conservatives will be attempting, and Boris Johnson particularly, attempting to sell the idea that he desperately wanted to come out, that he desperately wanted an election, that he wanted all of these things, that at each stage he was prevented from achieving the people's will by Parliament. And that will be what we'll hear again and again and again.
The many reporters are saying they're actually in election mode now, that the Prime Minister, I mean, we saw the spectacle of him giving a speech at the police training officers cadets in Yorkshire, I think it was. We saw him wrestling with a bull, a very elegant, good looking bull. These were classic election opportunities, and they presumably were set up when the plan was Jeremy Corbyn would say, yes, I will have a general election for October the 15th. But are we effectively going to see more of that in an unofficial general election campaign?
It's only a matter of time before we see him wearing a high-vis jacket and a hard hat.
I'm not hanging from a wire somewhere.
That old cliche. In a sense, we have been fighting this long war of an election since Boris Johnson became leader. The question always for him was, is it more difficult to hold a general election before you've secured Brexit, or securing Brexit without achieving a new general election? That seems to have been answered in the sense of the 31st of October, but there's still a question remaining about, can he get anything done without a majority? But that's the reason he's been in campaign mode effectively all along, because he's known the difficult task ahead of him, knowing that getting anything through is going to be difficult. But having said that, he will also be aware of the tectonic plates within his party and within Parliament. He will know, for instance, that
the withdrawal agreement was getting heavily defeated, sometimes by record numbers, but that when there was a chance of something getting through, it was highly likely that a lot of people would fall into line. But there was no point falling into line until there was a chance of getting it through. And so it wouldn't surprise me if a certain adjustment to the withdrawal agreement achieved perhaps at the last minute really could be enough to get through.
I think there's a growing view that he may end up trying to do something like that. Who are we to guess? But I just want to go back to him as a leader. He enjoyed in a poll, I think it was about a week, 2 weeks ago at most, where people might have said they don't have as much sort of trust in him as he would perhaps like, but they saw him as a strong and decisive leader. We've seen him effectively expel 21 and not junior, quite senior MPs from his party for rebelling and handing power effectively to the opposition and other MPs. I haven't seen any movement in the polls that have said this was outrageous, he shouldn't have done it. Have I missed something there?
No, there seems to be support for that position along Brexit lines. And so if you are a Leave supporter, you think
this goes back to your earlier point.
Exactly right, to get rid of him. But to refer back to the poll that you were talking about, it was actually one that Delta Poll ran, my company. And
therefore it is the best.
Well, it's very nice of you and correct of you to say. And what we found was when it came to things like not being afraid to make tough decisions, strength of character to handle a crisis well, has what it takes to get the job done, Boris Johnson was ahead by some distance over
and that can only get
Jeremy
better
Corbyn.
At the moment, can't it? Unless he falls off the cliff of 31st of October without it.
Yes, I think in those kind of personal ratings, what we call valence judgments, I think he probably will simply improve his position. And so that's definitely working in his favour. Also working in his favour is the fact that his personal ratings, whether he's doing a good or a bad job, are significantly higher. We're talking 40 points higher than Jeremy Corbyn.
Could these be dented by Les Amber Rudd, the Work and Pensions Secretary, who resigned? And frankly, I think most people think, what was she doing in the cabinet in the first place? Not because of her particular skill sets, but she was quite a politically wide of Boris Johnson. But his brother, that's must have real hit for him when Joe Johnson left. Did you think that might knock it on the argument the Labour will put out? Well, if his brother doesn't trust him, then who, why can we?
Potentially, but that will take time to resonate. That will be part of a whole package of attacks that Labour will be throwing at Boris Johnson. And so far, yes, he's taken a bit of a dip in his personal ratings, but he's from such a high mark to begin with that he's still
compared to Jeremy Corbyn.
Exactly, still under, well, both in absolute terms and compared to Jeremy Corbyn. And when you ask people, okay, who's best to deal with the Brexit negotiations, Boris Johnson wins by a margin of over 2-1 over
Jeremy
Corbyn.
That must be making him think, and we'll have to go to a break in a second, but that must be making him think he can win an election after the 31st of October if he's still in the EU, I would have thought. Because personal leader, as we know, matters a lot. And unfortunately, it also means that the personal leader screws up, as we saw with Theresa May in the election, it can pay a heavy price. This is Talk Radio with me, Nick Dubois, live until 1 a.m, bringing you the latest on MPs debating whether there should be an early general election or not. And it's just coming up to midnight.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
This is Talk Radio.
This is indeed Talk Radio with me, Nick Dubois. It's the final day of this Parliament as the it's the final few hours as the 5-week suspension starts shortly. But it is not a quiet night. Mr. Johnson is attempting for the second time to put through a motion for a general election. Will he succeed? I very much doubt it. In the last few minutes, this is what Boris Johnson and Jeremy Corbyn had to say in Parliament.
I'd like to know, Mr. Speaker, if the Honourable Gentleman wishes to avoid a no-deal Brexit, why does he not call an election, get a mandate, go to Brussels and negotiate a deal himself? What's his objection to that?
Because, Mr. Speaker, we're the responsible party in this room. We don't want to crash out with no deal. And there is also, Mr. Speaker, the issue, of course, of trust in a Prime Minister who is unable to answer any questions and is desperate to suspend Parliament to avoid any scrutiny.
And this is what Ian Blackford, leader of the SNPs, had to say.
He thinks he can treat Parliament however he wants. He thinks he can ignore the people of Scotland to treat our Scottish Parliament, our government, and our citizens as second-class citizens. Mr. Speaker, Scotland will not be ignored. Scotland voted overwhelmingly to remain in the European Union. Scotland voted overwhelmingly for the SNP to oppose the Tory government here in Westminster. And Scotland will have the chance to vote to say that this Prime Minister, this government, does not represent the people of Scotland and our wishes.
Dear oh dear, they're getting very excited there, aren't they? But we will bring you the result and analysis of this late night debate here that is going through on in Parliament here on Talk Radio.
This is Talk Radio.
Well, it was getting very lively there, wasn't it? Do you hear all the passion, Joe?
Yes, yeah, although, interestingly, it doesn't look as busy as it did when we were looking previously. And, of course, the irony of this is that under the Fixed-Term Parliament Act, it's said that you need a two-thirds majority. But, of course, you need two-thirds of all MPs to vote in favour of an election.
I don't think there are two-thirds
of MPs even there. Well, so even if they all voted in favour, which they won't, we won't be getting...
Well, that's the bottom. If Labour have issued a whip, and I don't know what their whip is, i.e. their voting instruction, and everyone obeys it, and they've said we're going to abstain, they will have gone home.
Certainly, if I were a Labour MP, I'd spend a lot of time at home.
And do you know what? I used to see it when I was there, is that our whips would be saying, you must stay until the final vote because we could lose. And you see all the Labour MPs, when they were in we were in government, they're in opposition, going home with their suitcases. So you kind of knew what was going to happen. But I still think this can finish, presumably it's going to be finishing about 1 o'clock or 1:30 from what I can tell. You know, there we are. Anyway, it's some news is just coming out, which I know we're going to be talking about. And we have our guest, David Spencer, Talk Radio's news editor, on the line. Good evening, David.
How are you?
Well, I'm a little bemused. I'm meant to know what's going on as well, but boy, you can't go for a cup of coffee without something happening these days, can you?
Well, it is actually gripping. It feels like just a week ago that I was sat watching people talking about whether there should or shouldn't be an election happening in the Commons. And it is actually just a week ago when that was happening. A little bit less fraught than last week, some of the discussion tonight, but there have been some interesting speeches. You don't know what is going to happen. It is just bizarre, and if you try and explain this to the general public, you've got a Prime Minister that wants an election, an opposition that doesn't, and exactly why do they want an election? Do they really want an election? Is it a bluff? To be honest, a lot of it, a bit like Brexit overall, just feels for a lot of people like, can we not just get this done? Can we stop these games? And there have been a few speeches tonight to that effect, to some degree. Actually, a really quite impressive and measured speech, actually, from Sir Alan Duncan that's worth a mention. And your
because he's been quite excitable in times past, hasn't he? Particularly about Boris Johnson.
Yeah, and he referred to that, actually, when he got up to respond to this call by Boris for, you know, the second time to push for this early election. And he talked about the Fixed-Term Parliament Act, something your colleague mentioned. Mm. And this was obviously something that was one of the first things that David Cameron and Nick Clegg did together in the coalition. And he called tonight for the first thing that the next government does, whoever that is, to actually just repeal that and get rid of it, because it was supposed to, because of the coalition, perhaps in effect, give some stability. What we've seen over the last few sort of days and the last week, but over the last few years, is that it doesn't really do that at all. And it kind of, to some degree, seems a bit pointless. That was his point.
Yeah, and I think it's right, because that deal was stitched together because neither side, David Cameron or Nick Clegg, the leader of the Liberal Democrats, David Cameron, of course, the Prime Minister, they thought the other would want to cut and run when it politically suited them. So they bound themselves in wedlock for 5 years, and now we are paying a price for that. Some would say David Cameron's got quite a lot to answer for. I'm not sure I agree, but there you go. So your consensus tonight, we think that Labour MPs are even going home at the moment, so it's really a done deal, isn't it? Boris Johnson's going to lose another vote.
It looks that way to me. As you mentioned, the chamber looks like it's emptying, a lot quieter in some ways to last week's sort of debate that followed this push for an early election. Some of the responses have been pretty much the same messages we heard from last week, with Jeremy Corbyn saying that the Prime Minister is running away from scrutiny, Joe Swinson describing Boris Johnson as arrogant, but Boris Johnson, of course, in his address to the Commons, saying it's ironic that essentially the Labour Party, the opposition, are giving a confidence vote in the government by rejecting this idea for an election. It all seems to be sort of slightly silly games, even some mics being played around with by the Tory party during that debate this evening.
Some mics actually, being played with? Explain. Yeah, what are you talking about here?
Well, there was a microphone moved, and John Bercow, who we know obviously is into his final hurrah after confirming that earlier, had to sort of interrupt at one point to say, could you stop fiddling with the microphone? And it had to be turned in a certain direction so we could hear what Boris Johnson was saying. I think it feels like they're about to spend 5 weeks away from Parliament. I think that's what they're in, that kind of school holiday mode. Of course, they've got conferences to deal with, but there is a little bit of that atmosphere.
Well, not that many MPs actually go to conferences, to be fair. But actually, in a way, when MPs do start to, shall we say, get demob happy or start to do things that look ridiculous to the public, it kind of supports Boris Johnson's argument that perhaps they shouldn't meet and we'll get more done. I mean, he's not quite saying that. But to the public, do they just look at Parliament and they're probably thinking, you might as well shut them down for a few weeks?
Well, I think a lot of the public would think that. Maybe if they feel that in that time something can actually happen, whether that will or not is obviously a big question, and that's one of the questions being asked tonight, because we've got this idea that Boris Johnson's going to, in theory, ignore what the rule of law now suggests, that he can't sort of leave without a deal, and therefore we could see a mid-October court battle rather than an election
but
battle.
Wouldn't that suit him?
Crazy.
Wouldn't that suit him in a way? Because he's saying, I'll obey the law, but it's not saying he won't challenge the law to seek clarity on the law. And would that allow him to effectively drift over the 31st of October, come out of the EU? Or is that completely gone now as an option because of this law that's received royal assent today that says you must ask for an extension if you don't get a deal?
Well, that's where there's some uncertainty. That's where, if that is the game, if we keep on referring to it as that, if that is what they're trying to do and kind of get across the line almost while the argument is happening October the 31st and we just kind of leave, then that may be the plan. I think what has obviously become clear over the last sort of week or so is that what Number 10 was trying to do perhaps had been sussed a little bit from the opposition, and that they kind of, the manoeuvres had taken place, and they were thinking, what can we do to counter that, and were a little bit caught out. And I think you saw that in the way that I think Boris Johnson changed the way that he spoke about the deal
today,
over the last week. Yeah, exactly. That rhetoric, certainly with Leo Varadkar in that press conference, felt very different. But to be honest, from day to day, hour to hour, we don't really know. I think it's quite a shame tonight, by the way, just to mention Lisa Forbes. It was her maiden speech, the new Peterborough MP. And a night like tonight, at an end of 10 days, however long they've been back, that poor old Lisa gets to do her maiden speech in the Commons, and it's rather lost in a sea of this continuing slightly hurrah rhetoric that perhaps a few people are a bit bored with.
Yes, it's quite possible. Their maiden speeches, we praise them however dire or however good they are. Now let's turn to something else. I fear there could be a spate of ructions from within the Conservative Party, because we are now allowed to talk about Theresa May's resignation honours list and who is in there but controversial figures, the former Prime Minister's chief EU negotiator, Ollie Robbins. What's he got?
Blamed by many. Yeah, well, a knighthood.
Yes.
And that's what you get for that. And after being blamed by many Tory MPs for her three times rejected Brexit deal, so for his part in Theresa May's last few months at number 10, getting a knighthood. Also, alongside that, some other controversial figures, former chiefs of staff.
This is the understatement of the night, actually. Yeah. Carry on.
Yeah, Nick Timothy, Fiona Hill, they were forced to quit number 10. People may remember in the wake of the 2017 general election debacle, that walk on the hill, let's do this election, let's call it, because we can get a nice firm majority. And then that campaign, which was, let's say, woeful, perhaps is the nicest way to put it. And they get CBEs in these departing honours. This Prime Minister leaves and then can give a few honours.
And what have they got, a CBE? Now, that isn't a knighthood, is it?
No, it's not a knighthood. They've got CBEs, Nick Timothy, Fiona Hill. It's Ollie Robbins who's got a knighthood. There's a few other sort of politicians.
Just can I ask you, though, if you don't mind, cut you off there for a second, Dave. I want to ask you, giving Nick Timothy and Fiona Hill a CBE, who were Theresa May's Joint Chief of Staff, now they dispute this actually, but many regard responsible for the 2017 general election debacle. There were 33 Conservative MPs who lost their seats that night, and it will seem to some that whilst they are out on a limb, not quite sure how many of them are doing, but I suspect it was an abrupt departure, unexpected, difficult to handle, obviously, even if you're in politics. And yet, Nick Timothy and Fiona Hill, some will say, are being rewarded for failure.
Yeah, I think that is definitely how some will see it. And you mentioned it. You said that this will cause a few ructions, and that is why. But I think that is partly, I think we had a similar kind of response with some of David Cameron's, I recall.
Yes, of which Theresa May was highly critical of.
and I think each time this plays out, you probably go with people saying, well, this just feels, I'm not 100% comfortable with it, would be perhaps, as you say, some of the politest ways to describe it. But absolutely, although they may play down what they think was their role in a general election campaign that obviously was disastrous because they did not. We know, we've seen Sir Alan Duncan that we referred to earlier on talking about, let's go for this election, Theresa. We really think we're going to come in with a sort of 80 to 100 majority. And then weeks later, when the election happened, we know how that played out. And for them to get CBs and to get recognition, I think a lot of people hearing this news would sort of do that slightly sigh, but this is the whole honours type thing, isn't it? We have this discussion every time. It feels a bit murky sometimes, but that's what happens. And the likes of David Lidington recognised, who was sort of Theresa May's de facto deputy at number 10.
And her ex-communications chief, Robbie Gibb.
Yeah, exactly. Others, all part of that, people go, this just happens. I think more interestingly, just from a sort of neutral point of view, we know Theresa May was a huge cricket fan, and there's some recognition for Jeff Boycott and the former England captain, Andrew Strauss. Who's had a really tough year or so because of the loss of his wife through a very rare form of cancer, actually. And away from that, you know, we know in the human side, and Theresa May did have that, that some people were surprised that she loves her cricket. So that actually is something maybe people also are a little bit dismissive of that type of thing. But that's a more human side to it, because away from the murk of the politics, someone like Andrew Strauss probably has done quite a lot of good for sport and perhaps ought to be recognised.
David, thank you very much for joining us. That's David Spencer, Talk Radio's own news editor, bringing us all the latest, including the doling out of appointments and honours, which is the privilege of a Prime Minister who leaves office. What you make of that, I will be interested in, and you can tweet me at Talk Radio or call me on 03444991000. This is Talk Radio with me, Nick Dubois, joined alongside Joe Twyman, founder of Delta Poll and not a recipient of an honour. We are
not
awaiting,
yet.
Not yet. Well, that's very optimistic of you. We await the result of MPs debating on whether there should be a general election. Still not sure when that's coming in, but we will bring it to you here on Talk Radio.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes.
This is Talk Radio.
And welcome back. This is Nick Dubois. Alongside me is Joe Twyman of Delta Poll. And it's the final hours of this Parliament and MPs are voting. You have breaking news here. They are going through the lobbies on whether there is going to be a early general election or not. I say going through the lobbies, Joe. Actually, as you pointed out, the opposition benches, most of them seem to be sitting on the green benches, which would imply they're abstaining.
Yes, that's right. As we mentioned, there needs to be 434 MPs supporting the general election. There, I very much doubt, are even 434 MPs left there, and those that are still there, a good proportion seem to be doing anything other than getting up to vote.
So Boris Johnson wins, but he doesn't win, because he wins the vote, but he doesn't have the, is it 60% required?
Yeah, doesn't have the numbers. And you can see a lot of the opposition MPs are sitting, some are even checking their phones and chatting. They appear to have no intention of voting. They will be abstaining. And so, as widely predicted, it looks like a general election will not be happening in the next.
So we send MPs to Parliament to act on our behalf and make decisions on our behalf. And there's nothing more depressing than watching them abstain. All we ask is you vote one way or the other. But nope, it looks like to me there's at least probably about 80 or 90 sitting in that chamber who have refused to move, and they don't have to, and they've chosen to abstain. Here we are, crucial time in our history, and the MPs have decided to sit on their backsides. Now look, maybe I'm just being a grumpy old man.
Well, it is very late.
But really, abstaining, it doesn't matter what it is to me. I don't believe an MP was sent to the House of Commons to abstain.
Yes, but of course MPs were sent to the House of Commons for very good and noble reasons, and yet when political reality hits, and strategic expediency requires, they will do what they believe, or rather what their party believes, is best. And in this particular instance, the opposition MPs, I assume it's Labour MPs, I can't see for certain, the Labour MPs believe...
Well, there's so many different MPs on the opposition benches now.
Yes, yeah, the Labour MPs, the independent MPs, the independent MPs with a capital I.
I've lost track of the names. Yeah,
and so have we all.
Let me know your thoughts. Are you fed up with all of this? Do you think we need a general election? And, you know, how possible is it Mr. Johnson will get a new deal? Call me on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio. Joe, right. Look, you're a professional. You're part of the Westminster Village. You kind of on the inside. But
And so you're wondering, why haven't I been given a knighthood yet? Because I'm wondering the same thing.
Join the queue. No, I don't think so. I can't see me getting on a horse and behaving like a knight of the realm.
For that. You know, give me a sword, I'll defend, well, perhaps not the Queen, but certainly my house.
But swords in the Houses of Commons are very important. You mentioned this lightly, but people will tell you that swords, okay, if you sit each side of where the Prime Minister sits and the leader of the opposition, there's a red line that goes down in front of where they sit, and you're not allowed to cross that line. You have to have a foot on that line at all times, and that gap between the two red lines is two sword lengths. The theory being you won't actually drag out your sword, because MPs used to have swords in Parliament all the time. Pretty good job they don't now. And they'd probably be using them. But that doesn't help us solve Brexit. Well, it might, but it'd be pretty drastic measures, and I'm not sure we should be doing that. We heard all the leaders getting very passionate and giving their reasons why they're not having an election. But at the end of the day, it's over tonight. Parliament goes into suspension, proroguing. And frankly, all we're going to see is silence from Westminster, and it's the government who will take the stage now. But actually, is the public generally going to be fed less news over the next few weeks because Parliament can do nothing? Is it a time for the government to get on and do something, or are we going to find it just all about the Prime Minister and all about what the EU say?
It's a really interesting question, and I don't think we know the answer because these circumstances are so unheralded. I think that I think what we will see, certainly the Prime Minister will hope that the attention will be on him and on his negotiations with the EU. He wants the spotlight to be on him, I assume.
Even though he's a bit cagey talking about them.
Yes, absolutely. He wants to be seen in the absence of other people. But having said that, during this time period, there is the party conference season. Mm. And it will be interesting to see how the media and others cover that period, given that Parliament will be suspended, as, of course, it is normally during that period.
But I suspect the parties, apart from perhaps Boris Johnson, who's quite honestly going to be talking about the Parliament versus people sort of thing, but they'll also want to be setting out their domestic agendas, won't they? And they'll be hoping to get coverage for that. Or am I misreading that and being naive and it'll all be about Brexit?
No, that will certainly be their hope. But often these things will boil down to a 30-second clip on the 6 o'clock or 10 o'clock news that evening, which in most cases nowadays is likely to be about Brexit. And so, yes, they'll do their best to boost their domestic agenda. And, of course, each party conference will feature speech after speech and event after event across all the different departments of government. And yet, really, Brexit is all that matters.
And the Conservatives will be quite frustrated because they're splashing the cash at the moment. We're seeing the end of austerity. We're seeing them fund 20,000 new police officers. We've seen more money for the NHS. No, I'm not going to do a party political broadcast, but the bottom line is they're splashing the cash and they want people to know.
But if they can't get Brexit through, it will all be for nothing. And they're aware of that, as is everyone else operating in the same world. It's an awareness that now we have reached the stage where it comes down to that. And if not that alone, then certainly that in the majority of cases.
Okay, well, we're going to have a lot on our plate in terms of how the government are going to get something through in the middle of this party season and what they will be saying to Brussels, what they will be saying to the trade negotiators throughout all that period. At the same time, they're meant to be doing this party political advert. Interesting times ahead. Now, we are heading up towards the vote. We're not quite there yet. We'll know when it's about to be declared because the whips all line up in front of the speaker and announce the result. In fact, if you're really keen-eyed, you can tell who's won beforehand, and I think it will be the Conservatives winning the vote but not getting enough MPs to support them. But literally from that moment on, it's they prorogue Parliament, don't they? I don't think there's any other business now. There might be a point of order or something. But
yeah, essentially that's the end of the day. We have this strange situation in this country where it's still in parliamentary terms. It is still Monday, and it doesn't cease to be Monday until the parliamentary work ends.
Well, and I'm sure that's just another strange, bizarre thing people will learn to accept of our great Parliament, and it is a great Parliament despite its failings. Look, interesting though, just to put it in perspective for people. We had this same issue in front of MPs last week, and the result was 298-4, i.e. 298 voted for an election, and against there were 56. And the real sort of challenger was did not vote, 288. So I'm not sure we're going to see much different, but the tellers are lined up now, and we should be getting the result very shortly. Although, oh no, hang on, no, some tellers are lined up, not all of them, so that's not going to help us. You can tell it's live radio, bringing to you the action from the floor of the House of
Commons. I tell
you
what, it's looking a lot busier now. The MPs who may have perhaps nipped off for a quick bite to eat or perhaps even a nap may have returned to vote once the division bell rang. It's certainly a much busier, much more packed House of Commons than we saw towards the end of the official debate.
As you're listening to Talk Radio, as we are waiting for the result to come in on the vote of whether there should be an early general election, all pundits, including us, are predicting that whilst the Prime Minister will win the vote, he will not have enough MPs required for the law to kick in that allows a general election, basically because the opposition don't want a general election, even though that is pretty much all they exist for, is to get a general election and try and win power. My name is Nick Dubois, and with me here is Joe Twyman, the founder of Delta Poll. I suppose I should have really put you on the spot. What's your latest poll told us about the demands for an early general election. In fact, have you done a poll or anyone done a poll on that?
Yes, we have. We found that a majority of people, though a slim majority, did favour a general election. But there was very little agreement about when that general election should be.
So Parliament is reflecting the people?
Yes, yes, in a sense it is. It tended to go with party political support. So essentially, if the party you support is not in government, you tend to want a general election. And that tends to be the way that that it is. I don't think people think about it in too complicated a manner, not particularly with regards to its impact.
But there is that sort of Brenda from Bristol factor that I thought we might get is, you know, oh no, not another one, which let's face it, it is only 2 years or so since the last one. There seems to be a sense that Boris Johnson again has got it right in the sense that he wants to break the deadlock, and the talk of a referendum seems to be non-existent, really, and it's all about a general election.
There's a difference, however, between support for a general election and enthusiasm for a general election, and were it to be called...
Oh, I think we're about to get the result now. Looks like it's coming in. I'm going to go straight over there.
The ayes to the right... 293. The nose to the left, 46.
That's less than last time.
Yeah.
For us,
for you. The eyes to the right, 293. The nose to the left, 46. So the eyes have it, the eyes have it.
Yeah.
However, I say by way of explanation, for those who observe our proceedings, and the nods suggest they're well ahead of me, which I would expect, the majority does not satisfy the requirements of the Fixed Term Parliaments Act for the purpose of engendering the election that some seek. I am simply the messenger, and I've reported the facts, and I'm glad that the matter is of interest to those who are looking upstairs, and thank you very much indeed. Order. Point of order, the Prime Minister. Unlock. Point of order, the Prime Minister.
I earlier urged the House to trust the people, but once again the opposition think they know better. They want the British Prime Minister to go to a vital negotiation without the power to walk away. They want to delay Brexit yet again, without further reference to those who voted for it, handing over to Brussels an extra £250 million a week for no purpose, enough to upgrade more than 5 hospitals or train 5,000 new nurses. And most egregiously of all, not only have they refused to choose the way ahead, they have now twice denied the British people their say in an election. The House cannot choose. It will not let anyone else choose, Mr. Speaker. It resolves only to be irresolute, decides only to be undecided, determined to dither adamant for drift. And so now the House will move to adjourn and resume the state opening and the Queen's speech on October the 14th. And I hope the opposition will use that time to reflect. Meanwhile, this government will press on with negotiating a deal. While preparing to leave without one. And I will go to that crucial summit in Brussels on October the 17th. And no matter how many devices this Parliament invents to tie my hands, I will strive, Mr. Speaker, to get an agreement in the national interest. This government will not delay Brexit any further. We will not allow the emphatic verdict of the referendum to be slowly suffocated by further calculated drift and paralysis. And while the opposition run from their duty to answer to those who put us here, they cannot hide forever. The moment will come. The moment will come when the people will finally get their chance to deliver their verdict, Mr. Speaker, on how faithfully this House executed their wishes. And I am determined that they will see
that it was this government that was on their side.
So the Prime Minister didn't win. He won the vote, but not enough MPs. Let's listen to Jeremy Corbyn.
I think we've had quite enough of the playground politics of the Conservative Party this evening. The one thing the Prime Minister didn't say was that he was going to obey the law of this country. He did not say he acknowledged or accepted three votes that have taken place in this Parliament. And under his request, the House is now due, apparently, this evening to be prorogued for one of the longest prorogations in history, simply in order to avoid any questioning of what he is doing or not doing, simply to avoid discussion about Yellowhammer, particularly to avoid any discussion about the proposals he has or hasn't or do or don't exist that have been put to the European Union. Mr. Speaker, this government is a disgrace, and the way the Prime Minister operates is a disgrace.
Oh dear. Be quiet. Jeremy Corbyn.
Mr. Speaker, I hope the Prime Minister will reflect on the issue of prorogation and shutting down Parliament to avoid a government being held to account, because that is exactly what he has done today and proposes to do to this country.
Point of order, Ian Blackburn.
Well, there we have it. You're listening to Nick Dubois, Talk Radio, coming to you with the live Jeremy Corbyn and Boris Johnson summing up after the result tonight, where the demand from the Prime Minister was, let's go for an early general election. Whilst he won the vote, he didn't actually secure enough support of MPs to get the election, which is required under a thing called the Fixed Term Parliaments Act. So we have the bizarre thing of the Prime Minister wanting a general election, and the leader of the opposition, whose sole job is to want to become Prime Minister as well as be the official opposition, doesn't want it. And there we are. Parliament will be prorogued shortly, i.e. put into suspension for up to 5 weeks. Joining me now to talk very timely on the verdict that's just come out of the House of Commons is Paul Connew, columnist for The New European. Good evening, Paul, and thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, in fact.
I'm sorry, you're right, it's good morning. Well, Parliament's still on Monday, you know, officially. Parliament is on Monday time, so I could hide behind
a technicality, but my watch tells me otherwise.
You're right, and thank you so much for joining us. So look, Paul, election, on the face of it, Boris Johnson is saying, hi, come on, let's go to the people, let's break this deadlock. He wants to go as a general election, Jeremy Corbyn says, and all the others who voted against it tonight say they want an election, but not now. This is going to play pretty badly with the public, isn't it?
Not necessarily. I mean, to me, the image here is of Muhammad Ali and the rumble in the jungle and rope-a-dope. In fact, Boris Johnson's tactic was try to turn Jeremy Corbyn and the other parties into the dopes, but in fact he's turned out to be the dope on the rope, shipping some pretty heavy punishment, much of it self-inflicted. And still, we don't have a clear undertaking, far from it, from the Prime Minister, that he is going to obey the law.
I think his ministers have said that, though. We had the Foreign Secretary and the Chancellor saying, of course we are going to respect the law, in fairness.
But the Prime Minister is the person who is meant to be going to Brussels to ask for the extension as per the instruction of Parliament, you know, and given the royal assent today. We haven't heard it from him. Didn't hear it from the House tonight.
Can
we
I
should
say,
have
do you,
done.
Do you take seriously then the possibility that he is going to use the limits of the law to avoid doing this? And if so, how do you think that might be?
I think there is that danger there. I hope he doesn't go down that road. But the briefing is coming out of Number 10, particularly coming out of people close to his Machiavellian strategist, Mr. Dominic Cummings, a man, lest we forget, still held in contempt of Parliament over Brexit. In fact, you know, seems to be telling people at times that, you know, the Prime Minister will not, in fact, or will find a way to avoid, in fact, obeying Parliament and obeying the law.
In fairness, the Prime Minister's saying, you know, I'm not going to have an extension. It's the do or die in the ditch. And he's now arguing that he will...
He's digging himself into a ditch.
He's now arguing, as we saw today, there was a lot more emphasis on the deal. Are you basically sort of a little bit of cake and eat it, saying, well, he's not going to get a deal, we all know that, and he's going to break the law? It's a bit of a stretch, that, to make that assumption he's going to break the law.
I'm not making that assumption. I'm saying that that risk is there. It's a risk the Prime Minister could easily...
But how?
Even though people don't trust him, you know, if he had got to his feet, you know, tonight and said... You know, undertaken that he would obey the law, that he would be asking for the extension, assuming that he doesn't strike some magical deal that no one seems to know about, in fact, at the EU summit, then, you know, in mid-October, then he could have laid those fears. He did not do it. I'm in a curious position here, because I'm a staunch Remainer, but I'm one of the very few pundits who did predict Leave would win the referendum 3 years ago. Why and where, after my own research in Labour Midland and Northern Heartland seats, I turned out to be much nearer to the result than most of the big opinion polls were. But half of my Leave research sample have now either changed their minds or at least welcome a second referendum. And the overwhelming reason they give for that is that they do not want a no-deal Brexit. They did not vote for a no-deal Brexit, quite reasonably, because that wasn't the platform on which the Leave campaign and the Prime Minister, as he is now, fought. And they would not vote for no deal given another opportunity, which is why I believe better than a general election would be a second referendum.
I'll come back to the referendum, I promise you, because we did say we'd touch on that. But I'd just like to press you a little bit, because, you know, I'm not sure, and I'm meant to know about these things as well. If the Prime Minister is not going to go over and ask for an extension, as has been alleged and suggested, he will break the law, some people say. How in practice do you think he, if we take him at his word that he will work within the limits of the law to stop it, how do you think he may do that? It's a practical, if you were gaming this, Paul, would you be saying, look, he could try and do this, he could try and do that? And if he does, we end up in the courts. And is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because I can't see myself how the claim, how it would roadmap out that he would avoid going.
Well, I mean, there have been suggestions, Nick, that, you know, that he could write two letters, you know, one obeying the law by asking, you know, for the extension, but then write a second letter saying this is not what he intends to do or what he wants.
Or he might just be a very difficult partner and try to block things and they therefore don't grant an extension, because there's no obligation on them.
No, there's not an obligation, and it has to be ratified, of course, by, you know, by all 27 members. But I think, just despite a little bit of sabre or maybe epee waving by, you know, by the French foreign minister the other day, I think it's 99.99% certain that the EU would grant the extension, because they've said there has to be a reason for it. So a general election or possibly a second referendum on the horizon would, I think, qualify what them granting that extension.
Paul, thank you very much for that. I did promise to have a word with Paul about the referendum, but we're pressing up against time on some issues. That was Paul Connew, columnist for The New European, a self-confessed prophet who saw the result of the referendum, but was actually on the Remain side. Paul, thank you very much for joining us. This is Talk Radio with me, Nick Dubois. As you join us, MPs have voted for a second time against a general election. Brenda in Bristol will be delighted. More analysis here on Talk Radio next.
No nonsense discussion.
It's Speech Radio, Jim.
This is Talk Radio.
Welcome back to this special programme with me, Nick Dubois, with Joe Twyman from Delta Poll here on Talk Radio, bringing you the latest going on in Parliament. Now, I told you earlier they voted. They should have all gone home. But they are doing points of order, and it's big, more full now than it was before. I don't get it. I'm not even going there. What we do know is in the last few minutes, MPs have voted for a second time against an early general election. Speaking just now in Parliament, the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson.
This government will press on with negotiating a deal. While preparing to leave without one. And I will go to that crucial summit in Brussels on October the 17th. And no matter how many devices this Parliament invents to tie my hands, I will strive, Mr. Speaker, to get an agreement in the national interest.
And here is the Leader of the Opposition, Jeremy Corbyn.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. I think we've had quite enough of the playground politics of the Conservative Party this evening. The one thing the Prime Minister didn't say was that he was going to obey the law of this country. He did not say he acknowledged or accepted three votes that have taken place in this Parliament. And under his request, the House is now due, apparently, this evening to be prorogued for one of the longest prorogations in history, simply in order to avoid any questioning of what he is doing or not doing, simply to avoid discussion about Yellowhammer, particularly to avoid any discussion about the proposals he has or hasn't or do or don't exist that have been put to the European Union. Mr. Speaker...
Well, I think we've had enough of that, haven't we? Because at the end of the day, the people are not getting the general election. Let's go and talk to Steve in Wellington. Steve, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning, Nick, and good morning to your distinguished guest also.
That's very kind of you, Steve. I'm a little flummoxed by tonight. You know, a leader of the opposition who doesn't want a general election, a prime minister who some would say is on the back ropes wanting a general election. I don't know. What do you make of it all, Steve?
Well, I concur. I think... We're going to get a bit of peace now for 5 weeks. That's probably a good thing. I've been involved in politics and stood in elections myself in the past. I've been around Tories and Liberal Democrats over the last 40-odd years.
Which part of the country now, or all over, Steve?
Well, I actually focused in Shropshire, South Shropshire.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I hope you won something.
Well, we gave the Tories a hell of a fright in 2013 in the unitary elections.
Okay.
And, you know, so on and so forth. Now,
yeah.
I actually think that we're moving, as a country, we're moving to PR by accident, really. Obviously, it's first past the post at the moment, but we end up with a PR situation, which effectively is what we've got now. And the way that we're going to be voting in the future, when the election comes in the next few weeks, it'll be for the Conservatives, and if the Conservatives don't look like they will achieve anything with regard to leaving the European Union, then we'll switch very quickly to the Brexit Party. If they fail, then at that point, forever and a day, we will vote independent, because we know the independents have got no chance of getting into power, and that will lead more and more to the PR.
Steve, the only thing is, part of the problem we've got at the moment is a minority government. We've got a coalition in opposition almost to some things and not others. That's often the product of PR. And it makes me wonder why we would embrace PR, given that the likely outcome of, shall we say, compromise governments, coalitions necessarily, and maybe minority governments, is not all the time a very good thing.
Oh, I totally agree with you. I think we've got our distinguished guest there, and he'll know more about this than I. When people are actually asked certain questions regarding politics and elections and so on and so forth, with all due respect to the general public, they are not wholly honest. I'm not saying they're dishonest, but they'll give an answer that might distort the poll, and pollsters have been accused of being wrong because they don't know what they're doing. I don't think that's the case. I think that the general public these days know what they're doing, and they'll make a comment accordingly. But
Steve, can I just ask Joe to come in on that? Because Joe, do you not try and actually, if you like, rule out any shenanigans like that?
Yes, and we take a lot of effort to do that. But your caller is right in the sense that there is an artificiality about asking someone a question. They may very well have not thought about it. They may give a response to that particular question that otherwise would not have entered their head. And so, in that sense, the response is different from the one that they're actually thinking about or is in their heart. It's a very complicated area.
So, Steve, I think he's basically validating your point. Steve, thank you very much for joining us this evening with that call. Certainly a thought-provoking one. I guess what he's also kind of pointing out is that other message was people are a bit disillusioned with politicians. They're going to start voting independents, anything but the main parties, and that's going to lead to a different type of parliament. And from that, he assumed we'd end up with PR. But, you know, disillusion with politics and voting for an alternative would suggest you still have faith in politics.
Yes, I think a far more likely outcome is that people will simply sit on their hands and become disengaged. And that is particularly problematic for younger people, because there's a lot of evidence to show that if you don't vote in the first election in which you're you're lost, yes.
And do you know, though, that this is perhaps little known, you might want to challenge me on this even, but I was listening to a discussion where it was pointed out that actually there were a number of people in their 40s, 50s and 60s who voted for the first time in the referendum.
Yes, no, that's true. And indeed, we saw similar phenomenon in the Trump election in the US. We saw people who believed that there wasn't a political movement or a political party or even a candidate that represented their views and spoke indeed to and for them. But with Brexit and with Trump, they felt
must feel absolutely furious that their vote has counted for nothing as far as they're concerned, because politicians are not doing what they promised to do.
Yeah, and that is a problem, particularly for people who are in constituencies where their vote, quote unquote, never counts because they support a party that is second or third place by some distance. This was their opportunity for it to count, and they may very well feel that it's not counting.
You see, and this is what drives me a little crazy, is that whilst we're having all the discussions about the merits of no deal and a deal and everything, we just don't talk enough about democracy. And in a way, this has been quite an important day in Parliament. And listening to Boris Johnson summing up there, he was basically saying, once again, you guys, the opponents, as you'd expect him to say, but where he's valid is he's saying, you are blocking Brexit. You are not giving the people a chance to have a say, a people who are already very frustrated that their first words were not heard, and now frustrated their second one is not being heard.
Well, they're making the argument that the opposition is making the argument that they're doing this to ensure that the no deal Brexit is prevented. And they say that there is not support in the country for a no deal. And in that respect, they are correct.
Well, someone's just walked in the studio who probably has not been listening to the House of Commons, have you? Welcome, Daryl Morris.
Good morning.
Coming on shortly, what have you got for us?
Oh, I have been listening to the House of Commons. I've been listening intently to the House of Commons for what feels like my entire life, Nick.
Did you ever listen when I was there?
I did, Nick. I did. Of course I did.
There you go.
I've got all of your speeches in a drawer somewhere. After 1 o'clock this morning, we're going to be taking stock of this news. We're going to catch up with Lewis Goodall, who is a correspondent for Sky News, and take stock of what this means. Take a breath. Parliament's about to break.
Well, you'd like to think so.
still rumbling on, isn't it? It's still rumbling on. So we'll do that. We're not going to do Brexit all night, Parliament all night.
No.
We'll get into some other stories.
It's
going to
calm down now for that, because they're all going home.
This is the sort of end of term party, I think, that we're on here, isn't it?
It is indeed. So a little bit of Brexit. What else are you going to be throwing at us?
A little bit of Brexit. We're also going to talk space as well. I don't want to alarm you, Nick, but NASA are currently on a mission to try and stop asteroid collision.
It's like the movies.
Yes. I think Bruce Willis is probably involved.
This is the answer to Brexit. So, we get hit by an asteroid.
Let's wipe us out.
Don't talk down the asteroid, Nick.
So after 1 o'clock, we're going to speak to Andy Lund, who is our space expert. We love an expert. Oh. I'm going to sort of champion it. No,
listen, it's the experts who keep predicting what the economy's going to do, and they're all wrong.
Well, I'm championing the experts.
I'm being boring. Come on, you champion the experts, Darren.
I am, I'm championing them. So we're going to speak to one after 1:30. And also the story of two lads from the north of England, from the Lake District, who have decided to clean up Lake Windermere by free diving, right? So they can free dive. They can hold their breath for they can hold their breath for like 3-4 minutes.
No,
just total breath. Hold. And they've found some incredible things. We'll find out what treasures they've unearthed from the Lake District.
I have to say, I hope they do other things that are safer. I can't think of plunging into cold. Why didn't they do this in the summer?
Yeah.
Why are we doing it in September? Yeah. It's going to get colder. But I'm sure we're going to find out on your fabulous show coming up after 1 o'clock. Well, it's been a historical day. Joe, thank you for joining me. Joe Twyman from Delta Pole. Marvellous to have you here. You put sense where sense was lacking. Become an MP. Go and sort things out.
I can't wait for the respect I get at the church fates.
I'm sure. But you were here on another historical day in Parliament as MPs voted to do nothing, basically, and not hold a general election. What happens next? I'd love to give you a clue. We will wait and see. But it's been fabulous to be with you. I'm Nick Dubois. Thanks for joining me. And Daryl Morris is next. Good night.
This is Talk Radio.